Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. Final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
And thank you once again for coming to Bard's Logic Political Talk, part of the Growing Conservative Conversation, and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to www.patriotjournalist.com. And whether you are listening from Blog Talk Radio or through the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, which you can find at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, where if you go to the Get Involved page, you will see some of the links of some of the places and guests we will have on tonight. And speaking of what we've got going on here on the show, and thank you very much for coming, whether you are coming and listening through Blog Talk Radio, as I said, the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, or the other venues of listening to the show. Thank you for coming in, and of course also for those who will be listening in on the archives. Now, tonight, we will be talking about the grassroots fight against Agenda 21. And a little quote I put in there is, information is the best weapon against a devious foe. And the reason why I say that is Agenda 21 uses the environmental movement, something I am a part of as an environmentalist. But, of course, that's not what the true goal is. And we'll discuss that tonight, in which it's more about, at least the way I put it, as the liberal agenda for using the environmental movement in order to propagate their redistribution of wealth agenda. And so tonight on Bard's Logic, we will discuss Agenda 21. And we'll have special guests on tonight, which one is Cindy Todd, who worked on Newt Gingrich's national and grassroots campaign. We will also have on tonight Rick Haven and Karen Schoen from Agenda21Today.com. We will also have American thinker and gulag-bound article contributor Mark Musser, and from the Facebook group page Sovereignty Campaign, and also a member of the gulagbound.com blog, and that is Arlen Williams. And we will talk about some of the topics tonight. Will be the Nature Conservancy, the smart meter, and the four E's of Agenda 21. And of course, more topics, and I do see some of the guests here chiming in, so I will open up the mics. First, I will be opening up Cindy's. Thank you very much for coming to the show. You there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. I've got two other mics here. And also, if you'd like to chime in, just press the 1 on your phone dial, and I will open up the mics. And we have another person from Florida, so I believe this could also be Rick or Karen, is opening up the mic here. Let's see. Is this Rick or Karen?
Rick is here.
Great, Rick. And then real quick, what I like to do is open up all the mics and, you know, no fear, we don't have people talking over each other here on Bard's Logic. That's one thing I cannot stand to hear when I used to watch the Talking Heads, a place like Fox News, which I don't watch anymore. But I did see someone else was in the switchboard. I guess they were just listening in. They weren't one of the callers. And if, of course, if you're one of the guest callers, call back in. And so the way I like to start is leave the floor to you, Cindy, to start some things off while we're waiting for Karen, Arlen, and Mark to call in. So go ahead, Cindy, and then we'll bring it over to you, Rick. And then I do see 954. If you'd like to chime in, if you're one of the guests, go ahead and press 1 on your number dial. If not, I will just wait a moment after Cindy, and I will open up your mic. But I do see 954 that you are on the air. Or not on the air, but you're waiting. So go ahead, Cindy. Sorry, you there, Cindy? Well, it looks like we had some drops, some phone trouble there. So what I'll do is I will open up 954's mic. And 954, are you there?
Yes, I am. It's Karen Schoen. Hi, how are you? Good evening.
I am good. Thank you very much for coming on the show. We did have Rick and Cindy on the line. However, oh, there they are. Something must have happened where it dropped both of their calls at the same time. So maybe something
very
in their area caused them to, yeah, they both dropped at the same time. So I wonder something in the area code. Cindy, is that you calling back?
Yeah, I got dropped somehow.
Yeah, so did Rick. So I was wondering if there was something on the 386 area that caused that. But we do have, while you got dropped, and there Rick is Karen has called in. And Karen, I'll reiterate what I said before, and we'll start off with Cindy, give it some intro, and then we'll move over to Rick, and then we'll go over to you, Karen. We also will have on calling in later, we're scheduled to have Mark Musser, and also Arlen Williams. So go ahead, Cindy.
Okay. Well, I thought, thank you, Karen, so much for being here. Rick, call back in if you're not already in. Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate y'all calling. What I thought we would do is start with kind of an Agenda 21 for Dummies kind of thing. Give a little bit of the history because we don't know how many of our listeners have you ever even heard of Agenda 21? My husband, I just mentioned it to him today, and he said he's never heard of it. So I kind of assumed that with all the junk that I've been doing that he would have heard me talking about it. But anyway, so let's do a little history first, talk about the documents and the UN assemblies that have created this monster, and then we'll kind of move on to some of the language that's in the documents, new words to listen for, and things like that, and the role of ICLEI and all of that. So let's start with some history.
That was Karen.
And real quick, Cindy, before you start, I would like to open up the mic, just in case he would like to chime in as well with anything that we hear, because it is going to be open discussion. Of course, we will not have anyone talking over each other, but it will be very civil and orderly. And at this point in time, I have Arlen Williams on the line from Gulag Bound and from the Facebook group page Sovereignty Campaign. Thank you very much for coming to the show, Arlen. How are you?
Great to be here. Eager to hear from Cindy and yourself and take part. I tend to have the big picture in mind on some of the things that Cindy was just talking about and not some of those details because I've never fought Agenda 21 on a local basis. I've publicized information about it in Gulag Bound, but I'm eager to hear more about the latest in all of this regards and maybe chime in just a time or two here, and looking forward to it.
Right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Arlen. Go ahead, Cindy.
Okay. Well, that's good, Arlen. We're glad to hear from you, too. And, Karen, what I wanted to do was how about start with the very first document, which I believe was the Rio Declaration. Is that true?
Well, actually, this goes back to about the 30s, but the one that everybody focuses on is the Rio Declaration, which is an offshoot of the sustainable document that Gro Harlem Brundtland wrote, of which she coined the phrase sustainable development. And then that was based on another document written by the Roosevelts called the Unfinished Agenda, when they added the piece that said, let's use the environment. So this has all been a progression going on for years and years and years. And the focus or where it actually came from, it was based on the ideal communist city. If you go back and remember communist Russia, for those people that studied history, Russia had city-states, and each of those city-states was a planned, contained unit focused on some type of industry. And this is where this concept came from. How to control people is what it's all about. And they modeled it after this Russian city-state concept. Okay, now...
Okay, now, go ahead.
Okay, what they did was, and why, one of the things that you said, which is, oh, we never heard about this. We don't know what it is. We don't know, it's crazy. It's not real. Well, that was done on purpose.
Sounds like your mic was breaking up a little bit. You're there, Karen?
Karen?
It sounds like that her mic is broken up. So
hi, I'm back. Is that okay?
Please enter your password.
Yes.
Then press pound.
I don't know what's going on here.
Right. Just somebody enter the password, then press pound.
Okay. So
unfortunately, the system cannot process your entries. Please try again later. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
So that was interesting.
That was
a little humor there on Bard's Logic Political Talk.
Isn't technology wonderful?
Indeed,
yes.
I love technology.
We love technology.
Anyway, what happened was at this meeting in Rio in 1992, all of the countries in the United Nations met. I think there was 172 countries. And they really seriously met on a yacht off of Rio, where they came together with this agenda. And it is the UN Agenda 21, which was coined as the agenda for the 21st century. So that's how it got its name. Now, the George Bush 41 is the one that signed it. And if you remember, he went to Congress and he, in his speech on 9/11/1990, so this was before the Rio Declaration, when he was speaking to Congress and talking about the Gulf War, he made the statements there of, let us use this war to bring in our new world order.
Yeah.
And that's what he was talking
that.
About.
Everybody remembers that.
Everybody remembers that. So yeah. Then he went and he signed the document, so we can't be surprised that he signed it. What happened was, in order for it to be implemented, they had to keep it secret. And J. Gary Lawrence, who was, I believe, the communications director under Bill Clinton, said that if the people knew that this was the United Nations agenda, they would not accept it. So we will call it something else. Hence the name Smart Growth, Sustainable Development, Smart Grid, Resilient Cities. Now the new one is Future Earth. They keep on changing the name. They're very famous for doing that, but it all means the same thing, Agenda 21. So when you go to talk to an elected official and you say, you're implementing Agenda 21, they have no idea what you're talking about, because they were talking about a resilient city program with walkable bike paths, not realizing it's the same program.
Mm-hmm.
So they are very crafty.
Great.
They're very crafty.
Go ahead, Cindy. Real quick, Karen. Go ahead, Cindy.
Can I bring you back to the Roosevelt for just a minute? Because
sure.
This ties into what you just said about Bush, how he said it had to be made a secret. When Roosevelt said, I'm assuming you mean Franklin, right? Or was that all the way back to Theodore?
This was back to Franklin. Well, actually, Theodore was the first progressive.
Okay.
So it really went back to Theodore, but he wasn't heavy-duty progressive like Franklin.
Right.
So it really started with Wilson, and Franklin took it to the next stratosphere.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So when he says, let's use the environment to get that done. What did he mean by that? Use the environment to do what?
In 1939, the Carnegies, bless their little heart, Andrew Carnegie.
Yeah, we love the Carnegies.
Love Andrew. He wrote a letter to Wilson, President Wilson, and he said they were studying mind control, and how could they control the mind of human beings so that they would no longer want to be free people? Because again, if we go back a step further, this is the same group that put together the sinister Federal Reserve Bank. And they realized that in order to control the world, they had to control two things. One, they had to control all the money, and then they had to be able to control the people. So they got the money part with the Federal Reserve Bank, and then they went to work on the people. Well, they were using wars, because what they were doing was they were financing both sides of the war, because they didn't care who won. Their goal was just to get the people killed. Because part of Agenda 21 calls for the depopulation of the planet. And they use the planet and say, we're overcrowded, we're overpopulated, blah, blah, blah. We have to depopulate the planet so that the people buy into that. We'll go there.
Sounds like Peter Singer.
After. We'll go after. Go back there in a minute. Let's go back to Carnegie. He wrote a telegram to Wilson, and he said, please continue the war a little longer because we're trying to study people and see what effect we can have on them to be able to manipulate their minds so that we don't have to go to war all the time to kill them. And
wow.
At the end of this report, they came back with that they could control people's minds through... Actually, it was the Pavlovian and Skinnerian method, which was stimulus response. So if you stimulate somebody, they will respond. Stimulus response. And they began to realize that they could use the schools to complete their experiment. And they came to an agreement. The Roosevelts were going to handle all of the national policy, and the Carnegies were going to handle all of the international policies. And in reality, what the Carnegies did became the Council on Foreign Relations, and what the Rockefellers did became the Council on Economic Relations. So one is managing our domestic policy, and the other was managing our foreign policy, both being the same group of people within the same agreement. Hence, we move forward. Now, as a result of this report, they realized that if they worked on crisis management, so if you create the crisis and you get the people riled up enough, they will go into automatic scare and beg the government to take care of them, and that you're seeing going on right now with Sandy Point. So they learned that really good.
Right.
They realized that if they used the environment, that would be a home run, because who doesn't want to save planet Earth? And anybody that went against any of their policies, they could fearmonger into, you hate the Earth, you want to kill the turtle, you want to kill the polar bears, you're not saving the whales, you're not giving money to the critters, that kind of stuff.
And just to interject, that's what Obamacare is about, too. You know, we had pass the bill in order to read it. It's not there to provide even a control long-term fascistic control of health care. It's there to have such a closed system that it fails, and that people will
use the
crisis,
but
they'll depend on government as a solution. It's there to be a ploy so that it works so badly that people will plead for nationalized health control.
Exactly. And nationalized health control gives them the ability to control the population and depopulate the planet. So what they do is they take pictures of heavily populated areas, and if you look at some of the vision plans that whatever they talk about, they always start out by saying, your population is going to grow 50%. Well, how the heck do you know that? You don't know that. You know, but those are the kinds of things that they do, when in reality, America, if we took all the people in the United States, all the families in the United States, and gave every family a quarter of an acre of property to live on, we would all fit in the state of Ohio. So how are we overpopulated? We're not. The reality is that there's too many people for them to control because there's not enough of them. So they have to scare us into thinking that we have to kill ourselves because we're going to destroy the planet and the balance of nature. So therefore, have abortions, have homosexuality, have all of the things that would stop people from having children, and then put in place a mechanism like Obamacare with death panels so they'll be able to choose and select who should live and who should die.
Or to put it briefly, it's like the old cranky man that yells to the kids, get off my lawn, get out of my yard, and they view the whole world as their yard.
Right. And Ted Turner, just listen to him, he's really charming, on some of his YouTubes where he says that a planet like Earth should only have about 500 million people. Now, Bill Gates is a little more generous. He feels that vaccines are okay and being euthanized is fine, and they should follow eugenics, and he would allow about a billion people. That would be fine.
Wow, that's
so
amazing.
Now, when you know that, the rest of it becomes, oh, my God, that's where that fits. And that's what Agenda 21 is. Agenda 21 attacks the principles of living by managing and controlling every aspect of human activity. And what they say is sustainability, which if you ask one of these environmentalists who comes around and talks about sustainability, ask them what sustainability means. I doubt if anyone will be able to tell you.
Yeah, everybody has a different definition. Yeah.
Real quick, folks, I just want to let Arlen know, I seen that the call got dropped, that his mic is back on. But someone we haven't heard from a bit, and I'd like to give the opportunity at this point to chime in. Of course, I will keep the other mics open for anyone else who wants to make a comment. But, Rick, is there anything you'd like to chime in about on anything you've heard so far?
Well, a little bit. One thing, Karen's group developed a flyer we use quite a bit. It's got an octopus with the tentacles spread out to let people know how invasive the Agenda 21 program is. And one of the tentacles is labeled energy, another one no borders, another one education, depopulation, finances and land, water and food. I mean, it like you said, it's trying to control every aspect of our life. And she was talking about the history. And so much what I'm concerned about myself, or what one facet I took out of Agenda 21, is the land use and the fact that we see so much land in the United States, it's moved from being private property to public lands. And so much of that is due to the influence of an organization called the Nature Conservancy. Now, the Nature Conservancy first began in 1916, it was called the Ecological Society of America. Well, I tell people, what else is going on in the world in 1916? Well, you had events in Russia that were leading up to the Bolshevik Revolution. We were seeing we're already embroiled in the First World War that looks like it's coming to an end at that time. But anyway, we get this Nature Conservancy. It was originally, like I said, it was renamed, it was just the Ecological Society of America. In 1946, it was renamed the Ecological Union, and it was formed, and the superintendent was a guy by the name of Shelford, Victor Shelford. But in 1951, they incorporated it as a nonprofit corporation in 1951 as the Nature Conservancy. In '61, they end up partnering with the Bureau of Land Management, and then Secretary of the Interior Stuart Udall, and Udall played a key role in the enactment of environmental acts that we know today, the Clean Water Acts, the Clean Water Restoration Acts. There's a Wilderness Act in 1964, the Endangered Species Preservation Act in 1966, the Land and Water Conservation Act in 1965, the Solid Waste Disposal Act in 65, the National Trail System Act in 68, and the Wild and Scenic Rivers thing also in 1968. And so what like Karen said, that they want to concentrate on, we got to do this preservation. And at the time, you know, I was in, that was the end of my college years, and everybody was, yeah, we got to take and preserve the United States, and every, you know, we saw the Sierra Club and all these other organizations come to light, and oh yeah, we got to save this and save the animals and so on. So everybody got on board real quick until you started seeing some of the stuff that they were wanting to do. The Nature Conservancy at that time, and started looking at how they could spread their control. And in 1988, their first land purchase was in Costa Rica. They went ahead and assumed $240,000 of debt of the government of Costa Rica. In exchange for that, they were given 117,000 acres in the highlands of Costa Rica and made it a national park. Today, they're in every country in the world. And since 1993, they now control every military base we have, as far as the land inside the base. They set the rules about how that land is supposed to be used, what they can and can't do.
When you say, wait a minute, Rick, when you say they control every military base, who are you talking about?
The Nature Conservancy sets the standards for the land use and every military base we have.
Okay.
Well, the question I want to pose to that is, you know, when them dictating, you know, what the land use is, and this is speaking from an environmentalist, and now you could be, you know, and I consider myself, you know, a conservative environmentalist, so, but I have to do, of course, you know, want to keep in mind protecting the environment. So where do you see that as a detriment that they, you know, purview what the land use is? In what ways is that negative? As I said, you know, I mean, if it's about actually protecting the environment, that's one thing, but if it's about just control, that's another. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, I'm going to learn more, and, you know, and I'm really not too fond of course, what I've been hearing about Agenda 21, because it seems like what it's done is co-opted the environmental movement and actually change it towards two things. One, redistribution of wealth agenda, and also a, you know, control, you know, the masses, so to speak, agenda as well. So you're talking about, you know, if they're controlling the, you know, the military bases, you know, how so? I mean, if we can elaborate a little bit on that. And I'd like to get Arlen's input on that, too. Arlen, if you'd like to chime in on that. Yeah, so go ahead, Rick.
Well, essentially, if you, with the U.S. military, whether it's an Army base, an Air Force base, if they have to get approval from this non-governmental agency about what they do on that base, doesn't that affect our national security? And how can this non-governmental agency have any vision or about how our military is supposed to act on their own reservation? And in doing automatically put themselves in control in a manner with those adjacent lands. I like to go back a little history.
Wondering,
okay.
I was wondering if you're meaning things like, let's say they need to build a new runway or build a new set of barracks or a new classroom or something, or let's say they're trying to set an agenda of how many sorties they're going to go up for in a training mission? You know, how many times are they going to get to go on a training mission? How much fuel are they going to use during those training missions? Is that all wrapped up in this thing?
Part of that, but also part of it is, okay, if you got a shooting range, they start dictating to the military that they have to go through and they have to clean the lead that's been spent in those shooting ranges.
Mm-hmm.
That gets real, real expensive, and there's never been any definitive proof that spent lead in a berm is going to do anything to affect the water or land use of that area.
Yeah, and into
yet
a
they
berm.
Can dictate to the military that they got to clean it up. They've got to go through and clean up a bombing range. I mean, it adds an awful lot of expense to our military.
Yeah.
That I think is unnecessary, and we see the Nature Conservancy go in other areas and say they want to take and save some kind of insect, a prairie chicken, some kind of minnow that swims in the river, and then they tell the military, you can't build that barracks, you can't do this, because it's going to, at some point, man was put here to take and rule over all the other wildlife. They were supposed to be his to use. And I just think it's wrong for this non-governmental agency to start dictating to our military and the population of the United States how we're supposed to live.
Well, I could put that into context.
Yeah.
Was it Chris, that brought out the Pavlovian methodology of and advanced by B.F. Skinner? That's what they're all about, and it's
mm-hmm.
evident in these Delphi methodology meetings that they have for rolling out Agenda 21 or ICLEI values, triple bottom line financing and zoning. When they have citizens meetings, they will call the herd, and that's what's been happening in the brass in the military, where we've had a lot of resignations, enforced resignations, and scandal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also what has been happening with just what you're talking about. I'll get back to it, but it's also what's been happening with allowing open homosexuality in the military and allowing women to, and putting it upon women that now you have the choice. So you can go into battle if you're a real patriot. Incidentally, on a little tangent, if you bring in women to fight on the front lines and bring in the military, which is performing exercises in major cities now all across America, that brings up the possibility of military being imposed on the population, but not only that, our young ladies being fronted up against our own people. And just imagine the effect there. But in all these instances, what we're talking about is two things. You condition, and the TSA in the airports is just a classic B.F. Skinner operant conditioning approach. You want to fly? Okay, well, do you want the feel or the scan? You want to be nuked or you want to be grabbed? And so
mm-hmm.
what we have is we call the herd. The people that object to it are moved out, and or they get out. They don't want it. And
right.
Incidentally, it's happened in South Africa, and they called it white flight, and it happened in Rhodesia. And all of Southern Africa, and then those that stick around are the ones that, well, these are malleable people, and we can mold them our way with our further conditioning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the approach that they take. That's the pattern that they use, and it's evident across the board in political campaigns as well, and in just everything they get involved in.
Part of the, I think, with Agenda 21, it's very prevalent in the Law of the Sea Treaty.
Mm-hmm.
We had our U.S. Navy
in favor of
the Law of the Sea Treaty. It was signed by Al Gore and our ambassadors in 1982, and then in 1983 we tried to get the Senate to ratify it, and that's when Reagan was president, and he said not only no, but hell no. Because it gave up our sovereignty of our nation. But part of the Agenda 21 involvement in the Law of the Sea Treaty was it was going to give to the UN than control of all the tidal waters in the world and all the minerals below it and the banks of that, of all those tidal waters. Here in Florida, that brings the UN control down the St. John's River all the way to the bridge that goes between St. Augustine and Green Cove Springs. That's 40 miles inland, and Obama tried to do it with an executive order here a year ago,
mm-hmm.
ratify it and go make an end run around the Senate. So we've had all these years of all this environmental stuff, and then again since 1968 with the or 1980 with this non-governmental agency indicating to the military what they could and couldn't do. And this was a carrot they kind of held out the military. Look, you can agree to this, and then we get this.
Okay, real quick, Rick, and we'll continue on. I hear that Karen wants to chime in on something, so let's go ahead and open that up for her. Go ahead, Karen.
Okay, thank you. I'm a why person. I like to know why everything is happening.
Me too.
And I have to understand why, because you can't tackle a plan unless you know what's behind it. And everything that we're talking about is rooted in communism and part of the communist planks. The reason why they want the land, they have explained, and that's in their Vancouver UN Habitat Plan of Action from 1976. And it says land, because of its unique nature and crucial role it plays in human settlements, cannot be treated as ordinary assets controlled by individuals and subject to the pressures and inefficiencies of the market. Private land ownership is also a principal instrument of accumulation and concentration of wealth, and therefore contributes to social injustice. If unchecked, it may become a major obstacle in the planning and implementation of development schemes, social justice, urban renewal and developments, the provision of decent dwellings and healthy conditions for the people can only be achieved if land is used in the interests of society as a whole. So they have no desire any of these green movements, and you were right. What they did was, like everything else, an idea can be wonderful in the right hands. It can be disastrous in the wrong hands. So we have a group of people that understand the importance of stewardship of the environment, and
mm-hmm.
then you have a group of people who say, man, I could use the stewardship of the environment to control the people. So that's really what has happened. And the people with the control and want to control everything are throwing money at the people on the environmental side and allowing the environmentalists to go to their extreme degree of takeaway, because the ultimate goal of the financiers is to own all the land.
Well,
so when you understand that, then all of these things, like with what Rick was saying about a military base, it's all about control. It has nothing to do with the environment. It has nothing to do with the military. They could care less. They want to control everything. And unfortunately, the women in the military and that part is also a communist ideal, an ideology, which comes from the fact that in order to control America, they had to do three things. One is they had to gain control over the family. So they had to break up the family unit and kick the father to the curb. Step on the father, emasculate the man. That's what they were all about. Okay? So the feminist movement came from there. Homosexuality got a big play from there. Women in the military, anything that they could do to emasculate the man. And they even wrote a welfare policy for the family only if it excluded the man.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have that piece.
Abortion,
okay,
kind
of, so we're going to get
too,
rid of the man. Then we have to get rid of God, and we're going to replace God with government, because government is all powerful, mighty, and gives you your rights. And then we have to replace country, because you can't be an individual American if you have to live in the good of the collective. So we're going to replace America with the United Nations. And that's the focus of how Agenda 21 works.
Well, that's very well said. And I'm just going to chime in a little bit, and then we'll open the floor back up for the guests, and thank you very much. That definitely is a great explanation, because one of the things that really bothers me about Agenda 21 is, and as I said, as being an environmentalist, and I consider myself a conservative environmentalist, and one of which, if people look at some of the things that Newt Gingrich has said and wrote, I really follow along with, you know, a lot of his ideas about how the environment ought to be protected. You know, and so and what happens is, and I'll bring up Newt Gingrich, something he said, is that, you know, every time that something is even brought up with, you know, with an idea of protecting the environment, is that because, you know, what this left-wing takeover over the movement, what it's done is every time something has been brought up, even if it is genuinely to protect the environment, the, you know, conservatives, rise up against it because they think, okay, well, this must be coming from some kind of liberal agenda. So it's really skewed and really, gunked up the work, so to speak, for the true environmentalists who would like to see, you know, a hybrid, as it were, of protecting the environment, but doing it so in a way in which will actually increase, you know, the economy, you know, build the economy upon, you know, what I would say a true, environmental market. And one of the things, we've had some folks on the show, and they can look back in the archives, of which, you know, there are industries out there which are both profitable and environmentally friendly. Check out one of the archives where I had these folks in about, you know, irrigation, and it was, profitable, as I said, and it's a new industry that's coming out where it's subsurface irrigation. I won't go into too much of it, but that's just one of the ways in which, you know, you can have a business that's, you know, not going to hurt the economy, but yet also be environmentally friendly. So anyway, that's a whole new topic. Sometimes I digress, right, Cindy? And I'll just go off on a tangent. You've heard me digress before. And I'll just go off this thing, because the environment's something that I'm very passionate about. And seeing what the folks with Agenda 21 are doing to what I call true environmentalists really gets my ire going. Go ahead,
Sonia. Could I say one thing? Because that's not what the Agenda 21 folks, yes, I agree with you, because we, as the agendas, happen to agree with you. It is not our goal to not protect anything. What we are saying is it should not be in the extreme. It should not be as a result of a crisis. It should come with scientific evidence and real costs. And it should be a real program that people are not forced into doing, that mm-hmm. does not need subsidies and tax write-offs and grants to be implemented. So if it's a real right. project that has real validity, the people love it. They'll do it. But when you have some of these schemes, like the one that's going in South Florida now, where you have this 750 plan, which is supposed to be covering seven counties, making a regional bureaucratic group that will govern these three counties, and for 50 years. Think about how absurd that is. Think about back 50 years ago. Do you know, could you have predicted 50 years ago all of the technology that we have today? How could you plan a city for 50 years from now? It's impossible. So all it is, when you understand Agenda 21, it's not about the environment. It has nothing to do with the environment. Agenda 21 is following Cloward and Piven's ideology that if you overload the system, you will destroy the capitalist society and create a society of drones who are only capable of doing the bidding of the government because they think that the government is their god and is there to be the end-all, be-all, and that's it. And that's all this is. This has nothing, that's the problem. It has nothing to do with the environment. It has nothing to do with anything that's good. If you take out one of the words in one of the sentences, you get it. It could be a great thing. Wow, we need to do that. Yes, we should do that. But then the procedure of how you're going to do it, how are you going to make a town square? Well, somebody owns that land. Well, if he's not going to sell me that land because I want to put my town square there, then I'm going to turn around and go to the EPA and tell them to condemn that property because we're going to get that property for that town square. That's the thing that we object to.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things.
If I can interject something here, a little bit of history.
Yeah, sure. Sure, go ahead, Rick. But real quick, I want to say hello to Mary Scott. Thank you for your response there on Facebook. I'd just like to bring the people in from chat and also people who make comments while listening to the show, either on Facebook or in the chat or some of the other places. But, welcome to listening to the show, Mary. I appreciate you coming on and participating by making your posts there on Facebook. Go ahead, Rick.
Okay. The whole idea of Agenda 21 on its face is un-American. In 1785, when the Revolutionary War was over with, the treaty is signed and so forth, we had the Bank of England trying to foreclose on property in the New England area, in Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire. And what the Second Continental Congress did is they went ahead and patented all the land in what had been the original 13 colonies and eventually also the state of Vermont. Both Vermont, became a state in 1796, Florida in 1821. When Jefferson purchased the Louisiana Purchase, he did the same thing. He patented all that land to keep it safe from Europe and the hands of the Europeans. If you were living on the land in those 13 original colonies, that land patent was brought up to your name so that you had a lodeal title to your land. Because Jefferson and the Second Continental Congress saw the wealth of this nation was in the private ownership of land and what that land could generate in wealth, whether it's going to be for a farm or a manufacturing entity that would take and provide jobs that, again, would end up providing wealth to this nation. But when you start removing that private land and putting into public property and no longer generates any wealth, we have counties. I live in Putnam County, Florida, and we have 32% of our total acreage of 529,000 acres is now public land. And what happens is then you take and narrow the tax base, and that's my thing, is when you nail the tax base, you increase the taxes on those people that are still paying taxes. Now, I mentioned we had a lodeal title to land. Until May 12th of 1933, FDR pushes through Congress the Agriculture Act and changes the way the land is transferred in this country from a lodeal title to a warranty deed, and land is transferred now fee simple, which is as all of Europe was, which meant the crown, the ruling government owned the land, and you lived on it, and you paid a use tax. That's mm-hmm. how all land in the United yeah. States is transferred now, because when you go and do the land transfer from the guy you bought the house to you, and then it's recorded in the county, you now are just using the land because you don't have title to it. The county has title to your land.
Hmm.
And until 1994-95, you could send a description of your property that you owned to the Bureau of Land Management, either in Washington, D.C. or St. Louis, Missouri, and ask for that land patent, if you were in one of the 37 states or land patent, and ask that land patent to be brought up to your name. You now would have a lodeal title of the land, and you no longer have to pay any fee simple fees, which are the property taxes. Clinton told the Bureau of Land Management, you're no longer to do your job, don't issue any more land patents.
And go ahead, I'd like to open up the mic there for Arlen to chime in, and then go ahead, Cindy, if there's something you wanted to bring up as well. Go ahead.
Arlen? Let me ask Robert, is Mark able to participate in the program, Mark Musser?
Yes, actually, through our discussions, he said that he had some meetings and whatnot, and he wouldn't be able to come on until 11 o'clock Eastern time. I apologize if I didn't inform the folks earlier on that note. But, yes, he did say he'll be making in tonight, but he wouldn't be able to make it till 8 p.m. his time, which would be 11 o'clock our time.
I'll just
Eastern time.
Help you introduce him a little bit, if you don't mind. Articles at Gulag Bound. We have gulagbound.com. We have numerous of his articles. He's written a book called Nazi Oaks about the Green Movement in the Nazi schema. And it's very true that what was just said and what has been said about the Marxist methodologies in Agenda 21, it's also true that it likewise stems from Nazi Germany and the favorite Nazi philosophers of the Enlightenment in Germany, including Schopenhauer and Nietzsche and the famous Nazi philosopher Heidelberg, and he can explain that. We also have an article in Gulag Bound called The Royal Side of the Fascism Behind Agenda 21. You could find it by that title, written by William Kay, which is actually a book report of a professor's work named Petropoulos in California, who wrote a book called Royals and the Reich. And he describes the way that Nazism was supported by a lot of the royals in Europe, as well, including Prince Charles' daddy and his family. And it's no mean coincidence that that yacht that George H.W. Bush signed the Rio Accords on was the yacht of Prince Charles.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. And,
also, Bush's father, Prescott, was mm-hmm. also involved because he was friends with the monarchy.
Prescott was actually a financier of Hitler.
And the gas chambers. They provided the new gas, which had no smell.
How about it? And
lucky.
And then, curiously enough, George H.W. Bush, I think, and his son, George W. Bush, were involved in Yale in the Skull and Bones, which is very, very, very parallel to the Thule Society, which the top-level Nazis were involved with, in the same Skull and Bones logo. And the occultism that's involved with all of this is also of consideration. You know, one cannot grasp, I don't believe, the level of integration and planning and execution and, let's use the C word, conspiracy, involved in this, unless one understands the spirit world in back of these movers and shakers and whatever brings them together. I think that is a part of it. So we'll hear from Mark. Mark, incidentally, has written on the parallels when the abortion, abortion calamity in America and Baal worship in the time of the Old Testament, where they would have orgies and sacrifice their children into the burning belly of Molech as they were executing their orgy worship. And I think the poetic parallels are very evident. And of course, it comes down to even seeing Madonna and Beyonce in their Super Bowl halftime shows. But I don't want to get too far afield in it. What I say in most of these programs whenever I talk, and I'll leave it at this, is if you think that if you've gotten here because you have suspicions about Marxism in America, you're right. If you got here because you have suspicions about multinational corporations and their influence in America, in the Republican Party as well as the Democratic Party, you're right. If you think that there's a problem with statism in general, you're right. If you think there's a problem with occultism, you're right. And if you think that fascism is a problem, if you think that the central banks are a problem, if you think the United Nations is a problem, if that's what brings you here, or if you just got offended because of zoning stipulations in your neighborhood, you're right on all accounts. It all comes together.
You're right, Arlen. And let me just go back for a second. Can you guys hear me all right?
Yes.
Yeah, I hear you fine.
I put on my earplugs, and I wasn't sure if, you know, sometimes I talk too loud or too soft. Okay.
You're just right.
Okay. Going back to the documents, the historical documents. Now, Rick was stating some stuff about, you know, some legislation that was passed through the years from the early 1900s up to now. And then the world got involved in the UN and the Rio Declaration. Now, I'm saying this because we cannot possibly cover everything that there is to cover about Agenda 21 on this show tonight. In fact, even if we do another show next week, which is what we were going to try to do, you still aren't going to be able to cover every aspect of it. People need to get online and Google the Rio Declaration right there for all to see, and the Johannesburg Declaration of Sustainable Development. So those two documents, the Rio Declaration is basically the stating of the goals of Agenda 21, what they want to accomplish. The Johannesburg Declaration on Sustainable Development is more the exact implementation plan. How are they going to implement these things in all different parts of the world? This is a global effort. The United States is probably the number one pusher of all of this. And I say United States, meaning our elite leaders, not me, not the people. The people don't even know what's going on. So those two documents you need to look up on your internet and start reading, because these are not put out by us. Don't call us conspiracy theorists here on this show today, because we're not the ones who made up these documents. These are UN documents, and they're there for everybody to see. So get educated, and that's part of why we're up here today. Now, Karen, you have four E's that you like to talk about in relation to Agenda 21. I know that one of your E's is one of my pet peeves, and that's the economy. First of all, would you tell us what the four E's are, and do you have a particular one like that you like to start with when you talk about your E's, or can I request the economy first?
No, I have. I'm an equal opportunity. It doesn't matter.
I hope one of these equalizers.
That doesn't make any difference. Agenda 21 ties the human element, ties the world together by saying, in order for any policy to be created, passed, and used, the new creator must integrate the economy, the environment, and equity. And by putting that all together, as long as all of those are equal, then you can have a fruitful Agenda 21. Then you will have a utopian society. What they really mean, or what the hardcore definition of sustainability, which comes from, I told you before, the book from Gro Harlem Brundtland, it's called Our Common Future. And she is a friend of Hillary Clinton. Why are we not surprised? But she said that sustainable development meets the needs of the development of society, that meets the needs of the present society without compromising the needs of the future society to meet their own needs. Could somebody please explain that to me? Because nobody can. In essence, what they are trying to say is you can't touch anything because tomorrow somebody may need it, and if you touch it, they won't have it, so you can't touch it. So in reality, it's a How can we restrict you and restrict your consumption and give you the least for the biggest bang for our buck? Make you work the hardest for the least, because we're going to tell you that if you do that, your children tomorrow won't have it, and therefore you can't use it. So that's what this whole premise is based on. The other thing
I wonder which generation finally gets to use it. You ever wonder
It never ends. It's infinite. That's the nice thing about it. What I always tell everybody before we really talk about this is you have to understand the premises that are behind it. And then you will begin to realize that everything that we're experiencing now, everything is connected.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is happening at random. Everything is happening for a reason, and everything, and I don't care what it is, everything is based on lies. Nothing is the truth. Okay, so that's the hardest concept for people to get. So if you understand everything that we're talking about is based on lies. Okay, so now we can dig. You wanted to talk about the environment. I start out with the first sentence from Maurice Strong, who was the UN Secretary General and put this in place. And his sentence was, in order to save the environment, we must destroy capitalism. Now think about what's happening today. What are they doing? They must destroy capitalism. Why? Because they have to save the planet. Now, neither of which is
hey,
true.
Karen, I hate to.
That's what he said.
Karen, I hate to interrupt you real quick, and we'll get back to it in short order. But first, I'd like to open up the mic to, I believe, Mr. Mark Musser just called in. So I'd like to open up the mic, and we'll get back to on track with where you were going with that. Thank you very much, Mark, for calling into the show. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Great. So what we'll do here is, we'll finish off with Karen's points, and then we'll move over to you, Mark. And then we haven't heard from Rick for a little bit, so that's the order in which we'll do it. Okay, guys?
Okay.
Great. Go ahead, Karen. Thank you in the start for the interruption.
The whole object of Agenda 21 is money, power, and control. Everything else is a tool of getting there. So in order to take down the American economy, which is was the last stronghold, they used the Cloward and Piven method, which were two criminal economists in the 60s who said, if you want to destroy America, overload their system. They're so generous, they won't know. And that's exactly why we have open borders. That's part of it, to overload the system, because by taxing the system, the economy will implode upon itself. Then you have the banksters on Wall Street who got together with the government, because instead of now having capitalism, we have Keynesian socialism, fascism, and Wall Street gets together with the government to create laws and regulations that drive competitors out of business. And they do it by using the environment. And an example of that would be the screwy light bulb. Here you have the FDA saying mercury is, the EPA saying that mercury was a danger and could not mm-hmm. be used, and would had to be curtailed and outlawed, and horrible things about mercury, 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 turning around and filling light bulbs with mercury. So none of their policies make sense when you look at the policies. They are masters of word technology, and then they create programs that are designed to fail.
By the way, the same is true with a heavy metal used in these wind farm windmills.
Right, exactly.
It's molybdenum.
Perfect example.
Pollutes the environment.
Mm-hmm. Right. The windmills are killing the birds, And the but we have to get off the land to protect the birds. But that's okay to have the windmills to kill the birds. That's all right. In the case of our economy presently, let's take a look at that. How did that get created? Well, you had to redistribute wealth. That was the goal. So Bill Clinton, his parting gift to the American people and the lame duck session of Congress, surprise, surprise, in an executive order, repealed the Glass-Steagall Act. And the Glass-Steagall Act was a financial act that was put in place to protect we the people against the banks becoming crooks by doing investing, mortgages, real estate, life insurance, and title work in-house under one roof, under one institution. And in order for Clinton to get the Community Redevelopment Act accepted by the banks, he had to give them something, so he repealed Glass-Steagall so they could create all of this fraud in-house.
By the way, Karen, I just want to let folks know that that was something Newt Gingrich, when he was running in the primaries, it's one of the things he was wanting to bring back was Glass-Steagall. Go ahead.
Okay. So now we have people who are unsuspecting and for the most part really could have afforded the house had not the market been destroyed the way it was. Being able to get a house without putting any money down. Why was that done? Because the banks focused on the mortgages, and they, together with the Wall Street investment companies, now because they could all do the same thing in-house, worked out a really neat scheme to separate the mortgages into two pieces, one piece called servicing. So the person who did the servicing was actually just collecting the money. They weren't doing anything else. They were just money collectors. And then the actual physical house became what they called a collateralized debt obligation or collateralized mortgage instrument or collateralized real estate instrument, and they packaged those in packages of $50 million, $100 million, $200 million, whatever, and sold them to what they called the secondary market, which was Wall Street. Wall Street then turned around to the investment houses and insurance companies and countries and pension funds and said, okay, we have these mortgages and we will let you buy these packaged mortgages, and you, Mr. Pension Fund, will collect the money coming in on the mortgage. Sounds really nice, huh? Well, what they were doing then was, because this was working out so well and they figured, oh, let's increase our whatevers, they dropped all of the guidelines, and that we have Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who are not government organizations. They are also private corporations. They began to write the guidelines for the mortgage industry, and then turned around to the federal government and said, if we write the standards and we collect, we become the servicers, we can, get lots and lots of mortgages if you, the federal government, will just ensure the fact that these mortgages will not default. And they had a nice little operation going there. So Fannie and Freddie would insure up to 80%, and we, the people, would insure from 80 to 100%, and all the mortgages fell into the 100% category. I was a mortgage broker at this time. We had banks coming into our office saying, essentially, if the person can breathe and sign their name, give them a mortgage, because it no longer became the quality, which originally when I started in the industry was there, it became the quantity. And
mortgage companies were getting bonuses for how many mortgages could you do, how many loans could you do, how many loans could you do. That's all we heard. And what happened was they took the mortgage and created a mortgage-backed security and a collateralized debt obligation and sold these in huge pools and turned around to the people and said, we used to qualify you on an adjustable rate mortgage on the actual term of the mortgage. So they would, if the interest rate was 6%, then that would be what they would qualify the person at. So if you could pay the 6% mortgage, you could get the mortgage. However, because we are the bank, we're going to discount it and you'll pay 4% for the first 3 years or 5 years or whatever. They turned around and said, well, we're not going to qualify you on the what they called the actual rate. We're going to qualify you on the discounted rate. So if you had a salary of $30,000, all of a sudden you would qualify for a $200,000 house because I'm reducing the interest rate. But what I'm not telling you is I'm only reducing it for a couple of years. Eventually, you're going to have to pay it. Now, simultaneously with that, the crooks said, oh, we'll also qualify you on any and all of your jobs. Originally, we used to qualify people on a second job if they had a real paycheck and were working at that job for 2 years and reported it on their income tax. Well, the new way of doing it was, do you have a second job? Yes. How much do you make? You need to make an extra $400 a month in order to qualify. Oh, you make $400 a month. Let me put down, would you sign $400 a month? Are you making that? Well, I'm not showing it on my income tax. Well, that's okay. You don't have to show us your income tax. We'll take your word for it. That's the way mortgages were being done. So people were being duped into low initiating rates, low start rates, and they were being qualified on their second and third jobs.
Okay, that's a wonderful explanation.
Okay.
Can you do it sometime with the whiteboard? Do you have a whiteboard or blackboard to go with it?
Yeah. Hey, let me interject something here. Before we go to another subject, I want to interject this right now.
Go ahead, Cindy, and then I'd like to have Mark chime in on what he's heard so far. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, we got a step-by-step explanation of what was going on, and they, the banks knew exactly what was going on. Okay.
Yes.
Now, there was no question but what those banks knew exactly what was going to eventually happen, that there was going to be a housing crash. This was totally orchestrated. Now, how do I know that? Because they had warnings galore. George Bush W. told them, but he didn't push it because he didn't intend to. Newt Gingrich, who was doing consulting, told them that they had to stop giving these loans out to people who could not pay. They told him what he could do with his advice and kept going. And you heard Barney Frank, how he just got adamant. And you heard all the bankers that were honest and came forward. You heard them say how their arms were twisted behind their back by politicians who came into their office and said, if you don't make these loans, we're going to make it really hard for your business. All those things you look at, and you know that this was all done on purpose, and it all was leading to not only the crash of the housing market, but the crash of the dollar, which is soon to come. So, now, maybe Mark, you can.
That's what I was thinking.
Mark, how is crashing the dollar going to further the Agenda 21 agenda?
I'm sorry, I get on the middle of this thing, and I'm not sure where the conversation has come from, but we're going from Agenda 21 to the dollar. I'm not an expert in that field. So everything what you're saying, though, I mean, I've been watching this for a long time, and paying attention to it. And obviously, there's a lot of, you know, the economic things are not good, and the bank thing was a big big liberal push. Basically, they turned all the houses into welfare, and that's why our economy is in such bad shape. But how related specifically to Agenda 21, I
guess.
If they wanted a one-world government, you can't have a one-world government if all of the national governments have their own currency. You have to create a global currency, and that's why they created the euro. They expected that to be the global currency. Well, the euro fell apart, and now they can't have the dollar because of the debt, so they're trying to create a world currency, of which it won't be paper, it'll be a plastic card.
Okay, real quick here, before we move on more, I'd like to open up the mic more for Mark. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure on some of those things, you know, the plans. I haven't read in those types of things. All I know is that, you know, Agenda 21 is designed to, they got basically sort of a six-point program. You know, maybe you guys have already talked about this earlier, but the number one thing, they want to educate people. There's a crisis out there, and, of course, global warming is one of them, but the environmentalism in general is what they use. Secondly, they have a call to action that they want to – they use the crisis to have a call to action. And then, of course, they've had all these summits, and then they deliberate about all these summits, and, of course, they go to Rio. They go to these nice places to talk about all the world's environmental problems, and they have, you know, the consensus building. They try to come up with a social contract, which they can also apply in different nations. And then, you know, then the different nations and different people involved in these different countries, they have a responsibility to try to implement in their own country. So there's, you know, there is an interplay between the, you know, the big plan versus the local. You know, you hear the buy local and, of course, you know, think globally and act locally. I mean, you know, they're trying to bring these things together from the small town to the you know, the big ideas which they have. So they involve the federal governments, too, and from there they go down to the local authorities. And so you go down from the big summits down to the national entity, and then they try to apply it locally. And then the people on the local level also have to make their own decisions, you know, regarding what we're going to do in our own situation. You know, so that, you know, it's kind of an interesting all the way down from to local counties and cities and administrations and things like this. Then, of course, after they do that, they report back to the UN. That's sort of the last step. And what they really want is a global governance, and they want to tie it all together. And exactly how the dollar is played and the euro, I really couldn't tell you because I'm not an expert in that field. But obviously, they don't like money. I've read things where one of the things they want to do is actually get rid of money completely and use energy credits. You know, energy itself as part of their technocratic views. And so they probably don't really want money at all, some of these people, some of these leaders. And they just want to get rid of it and then use energy as the weapon or the means of exchange, which is kind of what that Chicago climate change was, you know, was all about earlier before that thing went belly up. So that's all I can tell. I'm not sure of any specific, you know, programs or papers that I've read that deal with the dollar and the euro, I mean, with regard to Agenda 21.
Well, real quick, I'm going to chime in because I'm taking this from the chat. Two folks we have in there. One is from Coalition of Freedom, which is another Blog Talk radio show that folks can listen to. Check it out there. Do a search where you can listen to the archives. And also Constitutionally Correct, which is another, I believe, Blog Talk radio show or Constitution radio show. Is another one. They're talking about China and the problem is China is creating its own currency. This is from Chris from Coalition of Freedom. Is the problem is China, and he chimes in, the problem is China and creating a currency for world trade, and also brings in China, India, et cetera, are going to become a huge conflict in the future, and China has its own agenda. And Constitutionally Correct mentioned about interviewing Tom DeWeese, which later on, Randy, I know I see you out there. I'll open up your mic later on, and I'd like to definitely hear what Mr. DeWeese had to say, if you'd like to chime in on that. But it looks like it's about 20 after 11, and so we have about 40 minutes of live time, but of course, as frequent listeners well know, that
many times this show goes into the extended period, and for those who could stay, great. But we could also open up the mic for callers from the audience to chime in a little bit before that time so they can bring in those parts of the discussion. Because I'd really be interested, Randy, in hearing what the interview with Tom DeWeese, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and also he talks about Italy. So what I'd like to do, briefly, we won't cover it a lot, but since they did bring up China as one point, and Italy, if we could, briefly talk about those two subjects. If anyone would like to chime in on that, go ahead. We'll start with the China. So anyone you'd like to...
Who are you directing the question to?
Well, either one. If anyone would like to, either one here on the panel here would like to bring up where China comes into play in all this with Agenda 21. And as Chris pointed out, they also have their own agenda, which might not coincide with Agenda 21. Anyone want to chime in on that or?
Okay. Yeah. The information that I read would be that China and Russia and Brazil are working together with a common goal of destroying the West, being America. They have done a magnificent job at doing it in Europe, and now we are the last stronghold left. And if we don't stop what's going on, then the goal, from what I was told, is that China will control probably up to the Texas area, and Russia will come down from Alaska. They're after the oil. Let's be clear what do they want before we go there and what this is all about. They want the oil and the natural resources of America, and we are in debt to China, and Obama is giving away our country, our land, and natural resources to China. Rick Scott just opened up trade and a charter school, a communist Chinese charter school in Florida.
Wow.
They want Florida. They want Florida. I don't know if everybody knows, but Florida has the largest natural gas reserve in the world. We're sitting on that. They want Florida. Their goal is to own land-wise 80% of Florida. Florida also has something that's very unique called water. The water in Florida, even though there may be a drought, we don't have a water problem. We have a water storage problem, but we're not going to run out of water. So that's a big concern to China, because China does not have a good water supply. So China has...
Well, and they're killing their environment over there. Go ahead.
Well, they don't care.
Yeah.
They have too many people. They don't really want them. And they really treat their people the way we are going to be treated going forward. People to communists are only as good as how you can work. And when you have passed your station of work, you have passed your usefulness. They don't treat people as individuals. They treat them as a group, and you are only as good as how your group acts and behaves and how you are as part of that group.
Well, that's a big thing. Now, China is the proof that the goal of control over the globe really has nothing to do with trying to save the environment or make a better life for people and bring those poor people up to our level and spread the wealth around. It's not about even, bringing people into a more financially solid position. It's not taking the Africans and giving them, the same sort of a lifestyle that we have. It's not taking India and giving them our lifestyle. It's them taking us and bringing them down to the lifestyle of the Africans and the Indians so that we can be easily controlled, and then we become a slave population. Now, you look at history, that's what it's always been about. Some huge landowner, a king, barons, you know, the counts, everybody, the landowners, the people who gave out the land, they made, the people were just nothing but serfs. You know, they were workers, slaves, and serfs. And that's basically how the world operated until the late 1700s. And then democracy started. I mean, you had your, you know, Roman democracy type things, but it wasn't the same as what we had. And when America ushered in this new form of freedom for the people, liberty, it was really uplifting, and we grew, and people became prosperous. And look at the technological advances we made. I mean, people didn't drive cars more than 100 years ago, you know. So just the explosion of knowledge and technology happened because of the liberty that we had. And it shows what happens to an economy and to a people when you are given the freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom to pursue happiness, which are our God-given rights, and we finally got them. And now, because we're sleeping in our comfort, the comfort of our little homes and our little churches, because we're fast asleep, we're about to lose those liberties. And that's what it's all about. They have to bring America down in order for those elite people at the top, very, very uber-rich people. Believe me, there will always be uber-rich. So they will be a smaller group, and they'll be in control, and that's the way they want it.
Well, if I can interject, what made the United States so wealthy is the private ownership of land, because you can use the wealth of the land that you own and leverage against making yourself better. The other countries in this world don't own the land. You know, whether you live in England or whether it's any place in Europe, you have a house and a lease for the land. And so there's no way you can borrow against your house to buy a new car, to make improvements in your house, or anything else that, you know, for yourself, that you can increase your wealth. So the rest of the world is stuck. And that's what they want to put us. They want to put us just as poor and just as disadvantaged as the rest of the world. It's just the redistribution of the wealth, and only those in the wealth, the very elite in our world, are going to have any wealth.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be back to serfs and slaves.
Right. Go ahead, Lauren. It sounds like you want to chime in, and then we'll open up the mic for Mark. Go ahead.
I just thought I'd mention that the core grand experiment in what was just described was the French Revolution. And the same financial complex that funded what the Jacobins and Rousseau and eventually Napoleon did in France were the same people that were backing the royals in France. It's the same entities. And
yep, that's what Chris said earlier, yep.
And if you're behind both sides, well, there's actually a quote from one of the Rothschilds that as long as they're able to handle any side of the matter, they're in control and they're better off for it. And here again, that's not to pin the blame on bankers. When people do that, there are two dangers. Some people become anti-Semitic, and other people label people that are exposing what the central banks do as anti-Semitic, and that's as either Chris or Cindy or Karen brought out, you know, America is behind what's going on in Agenda 21 worldwide as much as any other nation. So if you want to blame Jews for what's going on with the central banking complex and financing all of this critical theory and conflict theory revolution around the world, and if you become anti-Israel as a result of that, then you might as well become anti-American and anti-United States of America because of all the Americans involved. In America, we had the liberty-based revolution. It's actually a sovereignty-based revolution, and I can get into that maybe later or maybe save it. And in France, we had a equality-based revolution. And that is that was the grand test bed for the Enlightenment philosophers from Germany and France and their financial interests that got involved and the union movement that got, and the anarchist movement, which is kind of an oxymoronic term, that got involved in all of that. And that's what we've been seeing replicated over and over and over again in all of these scenarios, whether one speaks of it as Leninist or Clauer-Pizan or frankly the Nazi movement. Was Nazism is basically the bastard. I think, is it okay, Mark, if I call it the bastard son of Marxism? It's kind of Marxism married to the old world money, and which tried to commandeer the movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Real quick, Mark, I do want you to chime in, but first, 407, I see you on the line, and you'd like to chime in. I will be opening up your mic in a while, but go ahead, Mark. I just wanted to let 407 know I see you wanted to chime in. Go ahead.
Well, you know, if you look at environmentalism, basically it's a European-American operation. It's not really something you're going to find in other countries that have really been tried. Or, number one, people don't have the money to implement it. Secondly, there's really not that that will to do those kinds of things, and certainly from the leadership, because, you know, they're just interested in making money. And a lot of these, especially in Europe, you know, environmentalism really comes out of a primarily German background. People don't realize that the background to environmentalism is largely born in Germany, and this goes back to the early 1800s. And you know, the Germans were always close to nature. You know, they viewed themselves in that way, and part of the reason why they hated the French Revolution and the Enlightenment. You know, there was sort of a backlash against the French Enlightenment was because they thought Napoleon represented all those evil forces that came in to destroy, you know, their own country. And they've always had these suspicious ideas of the Enlightenment because they got rid of the kings. You know, Germany liked the kings. Okay, they liked the aristocratic background of these types of things, the whole point of authority. So all these things are deeply ingrained in the German society. And so a lot of these things were upset by the French Revolution, of course, in America too, but their most experience was directly from the French Revolution. And then from there, you have sort of anti-Enlightenment views which grow in Germany over the next 100 years. So you have the German Romantic movement. And they also began to also criticize the Jews for, you know, destroying the environment. They're running the banks, they're running our economies, and they're developing the cities, and they're ruining our landscape. You know, that this was actually a common diatribe throughout the 1800s. And so you have the Romantic movement doing this. And by Romanticism, that, you know, they have romantic views about nature. And over time, this really simmered over the decades. And then you have also along with it German existentialism, which is like a hardened form of Romanticism, where they want to emphasize the earth and its existence over and against Judeo-Christian values that are above nature. And so they were against those things as well. So they wanted to sort of be indigenous to their own environment. All those indigenous ideas, as we understand it from a modern standpoint, really go back to Germany's preoccupation with indigenous ideas. And then from there, of course, things get more dicey with social Darwinism and evolutionary thought, which gets mixed into the mix. And the Germans thought they were on top of the totem pole. The very man that invented social Darwinism also coined the term ecology in 1866. His name is Ernst Haeckel. And so a lot of these ideas were really become the background for the Nazi movement. And so you have a little bit of the aristocratic, you know, the kingships going on. You have this existentialism going on. You have this romanticism going on. Then you have this social Darwinian racism and ecology going on. And all those things came together under the National Socialist umbrella, and it really became very dangerous by the 1930s and 40s. And so then out of there, you have the environment. You know, Nazi Germany was very environmentally minded. A lot of the things we're all talking about today were born in Nazi Germany, especially sustainable development. What you had was the Green Movement coming together, early German Green Movement coming together with the racist. And when you mix that racism with the Green Movement, it produced what we call sustainable development. And the Germans were the ones that really emphasized this, the Nazis back in the 1930s and 40s. And what they called it back then was sustainable development, or actually spatial planning. And so now, even today, the European Union is loaded with all this spatial planning ideas, which is what Agenda 21 is really all about. Lebensraum. I mean, that living space, this was Hitler's desire for the eastern territories. They were going to turn that into a paradise for sustainable development. And a lot of these ideas, living space, have been incorporated into the European Union. Of course, it's been denazified, but still, these same ideas. A lot of the environmental planners that out of the Nazi Germany, they went to work for they went back to university after the war was over, still pushing their ideas. And a lot of those sustainable development today are with us today because of it. So they were really the pioneers in a lot of areas with regard to sustainable development. Hitler wanted to cover Ukraine with windmills. Okay, this was his idea. They were going to have green garden parks in Poland. They were going to have master planned communities all over the, the Belarus and Ukraine was going to be this wonderful paradise for frontier farms. And they had all kinds of cockamamie schemes that they were going to come up with. And, spatial planning was at the heart of it.
Using all the people that they conquered, they're using their labor to do it.
Yeah, they using slave labor to do it, and that was part of the plan too, because they couldn't afford it. They didn't have the money for it, so they were going to subjugate the populations to pay for it and build it.
And would that be the? In my opinion, hearing all of this, is that seems to be the crux of the problem. Is I'm sure we've all heard, good intentions gone awry, or good intentions are the pathway to hell. But what it sounds like is what, at least for me as an environmentalist, is that the ideas of protecting the environment or environmental sustainability is not in and of itself, at least for me, not a negative goal. It's something I think that ought to be aspired to. I just think that the methods in which it's, at least it sounds like they've gone about in order to, in their attempt to obtain it, is where it has gone disastrously wrong.
Well, there's one thing that really bothers me about sustainable development, Robert, is that that really is I think the crux of the problem is that when you deal with wilderness preservation, that's one thing. Okay, you can set aside a wilderness up in the mountains, and people don't live there. The problem with sustainable development is that now what you do, you bring the greens into your own private property, okay, and then we're going to social engineer you according to what you do on your private property. This is the problem with sustainable development. When you start involving the corporations and especially the corporations, because they have all the big money. But what happens, you start losing your private property. And so, it's one thing to set aside nature reserves up in the mountains, okay, but when you start requiring people themselves almost like have your private property as a park for the government because of their plans, this is where we get ourselves in deep trouble, and then private property is lost. And I understand the issue here. I love the outdoors. I've climbed all over the North Cascades. I'm a hiker. I love Mount Rainier up here in the Pacific Northwest when we actually get some sunshine, which is very rare. And we live on a farm. I do everything I possibly can to make this place look neat. And, we work hard to take care of it and keep it clean. But there's only so much you can do, and you're going to be limited. And there's a lot of, we don't live in paradise. And this is part of the whole problem with the environmental movement. They seem to want to go back to the Garden of Eden, which is not possible. And you're going to have to accept some forms of pollution because that's just how the world works. You eat something, it's got to go somewhere. And this is true for everybody. And, there's only so much you can do. And environmentalists, they don't understand that. And they never know when to quit. In fact, they don't quit.
Well, I think another thing that's totally overlooked is the amount of built-in protections that God gave this earth to clean itself when it got dirty. I mean, just for instance, the animals on the ocean floor that eat all the crud off the bottom of the ocean. We have so many things in place, wind currents and water currents and stuff that clean just naturally on a natural basis. And yet they make it sound like every time you eat a banana and leave the peel on the ground, you're that's a major incident. Doesn't matter that banana peel is going to go into the earth, but maybe they're a little off of that. But anyway,
it's also part of the environmental evolutionary viewpoint. Is if they don't believe that God exists, okay, and they don't believe God made the world, and so really this places them in panic palace because they look at life. We live on the razor's edge of life, which in my opinion should give actually you know, God exists and that he's intelligently designed this world, okay, but they don't believe that. So what happens is they look at the razor's edge of life as something very fearful, and we need to keep it. And if we don't, we're going to die. And, of course, the universe is full of death. I mean, people can't live on Mars. And so they actually, their evolutionary views actually turn them into panic mongers. And then, of course, they're going to share their fears with me and then make me worry about these things, too. And then this is where we get into all the problems.
Does that come from one of these deep thought leaders, razor's edge of life, that phrase, Mark?
Well, the science has confirmed this, that life is, you know, hangs on the balance. There's no question about this. I mean, it's you go to Mars, you can't live there. It's too cold.
Oh, okay.
You go to Mercury, it's too hot. Okay, I mean, you go out in outer space and the sun is going to blaze you to death. I mean, with all kinds of, you know, gases and all kinds of storms that, you know, we can't survive without the Earth. I mean, they're, you know, they're still looking for life and they can't find it. Okay, and they look at the Earth and here it is, this small planet. And, you know, if you don't believe God made this Earth, and you're going to be worried about trying to save it and trying to keep it that way.
Certainly
so really their evolutionary views put them in Panic Palace. And they say they look at mankind, especially over the last 300 years and all the changes that he's brought about. And this doesn't line up with their evolutionary views, which are supposed to be very gradual. So then they blame man for being the guy that's out of kilter. And so we need to tame him down so that he doesn't destroy things because, you know, mankind's history has just totally destroyed the whole evolutionary theory, and so they have to control him.
However, to bring a different brand of razor into it, Occam's razor will tell us that life is pretty sturdy on Earth, and life, as you said, is not very much to be found elsewhere.
Yeah. Things are more robust than we give credit for, and I think part of the problem is your theological views. I mean, this, in fact, is the whole problem, in my opinion. I mean, this is what it's really all about. And if you don't have that belief with regard to the creation and that God made it, you're going to start making decisions which are dangerous for people because you know you're going to be all worried about what so-and-so is going to do with his private piece of property. We've got to stop that.
Well, we're looking real hard to take and limit the amount of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere, and it's been proven that we're only have about 50% of the carbon dioxide needed for the plant life we've got, and we're trying to take and reduce what we've got. It's going to reduce the output of any farming because there isn't ample carbon dioxide. Plants need carbon dioxide and put out oxygen.
Rick, carbon dioxide? That's why they picked on it. Because
right.
We need carbon dioxide for plant life. What's their goal? Depopulation. How do you do that? Create a food shortage. What do you think they're doing this for? That's why they're doing it.
Right, exactly.
They picked on the one thing that the plants need to live. And then they said, it's bad. We have to get rid of it. What happens?
Well,
the plants die. Oh, my goodness. Food shortage.
And on that, Karen, also, I mean, it is the gas that we exhale. So if population control is one of their goals, what's one of the reasons to lessen the amount of people is to lessen the amount of carbon dioxide that comes into the atmosphere through our breathing. But at this time, I see that we've got about 18 minutes of live show. So, of course, we do have the extended version, which will be recorded and will be able to be heard on the archives. And so if anyone would like to call in to listen to or chime into the extended version, go ahead and call in at area code 347-945-7428. And at this time, I'm going to open up 407. I'm going to open up your mic if you've been waiting on hold. Anyone else who was on the line, I do see some other folks there. If you'd like to chime in as well, just push the 1 on your number dial. Or if you're on Skype, just send me a message on chat, either on Facebook or through the Blog Talk Radio chat. Do so, and I'll let me know you'd like to come in. But at this time, since we are still live, I'd like to give some opportunities for people to give any websites or links or anything of that nature to share with the audience. Of course, we'll be heard live then also in the archives. And, of course, you guys, I have on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. Just go to the Get Involved page, and you will see some of the links to some of these websites, such as the Agenda21today.com,
markmusser.com, Gulag Bound, and a link to the Facebook page for the Sovereignty Campaign, which you folks can find at bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. So go ahead. I did give a little bit of name of those websites, but if people like to give a description, go ahead. Go ahead, Cindy.
Yeah, I was going to have them each, kind of like Karen, I want her to tell about her website, and Mark,
sure,
and Arlen. And also, I want Rick and Karen to, before this goes into overtime, I want people to know how to look for this in their own communities. And they are really experts on what has gone on in the local scene, especially I know Rick came and spoke to our group here in Daytona, and he has an astounding amount of information about what's been going on in just his county alone, that is all about Agenda 21, and he knows some about our county, Volusia County, and all. And I think what we need to do is have them name a few things to look for, and let me tell you, if you're not going to your county council meeting and you're not finding out what your people are doing, your city council meetings, your county council meetings, if you're not going in there and listening to what they're doing with your money and how they're buying things and they're taking out huge loans to buy land, if you're not following that, then you don't know what's going on in your community. But it is happening all over the country. So, Rick, would you please, now, first of all, whoever that was that came in on the 407, do you want to give them a chance to say something first?
Yeah, I think so. Go ahead. We definitely have time to get the information out, you know, either on live or in the archives here. So, 407, your mic is live. Go ahead.
Okay. Hey, this is Nathan in Orlando. I appreciate this. It won't take me but a second. I got a comment, but while I was sitting here listening to you, I thought about something as you guys were touching on the religious aspect of people putting their politics, whether it's atheism, evolution, or, you know, and you mentioned the God. And this was a good part about the founding fathers. They put in the Constitution nature and nature's God entitled them, talking about the laws. You know, so God gives us common sense, and I just recently got in a conversation with an atheist, and I ended the conversation real quick because he was a white supremacist, and he believed in evolution, but he was sitting here talking about all these people we need to get rid of in order for us as the white race to be able, and I said, you know, you say you don't believe in God, but you just illustrated God put heaven in your heart in that you believe that if we can just get rid of all these people, then it would be great. That's the same thing Hitler did. That's the same thing the Black Panthers does. That's the same things the Muslims are doing. But the problem is whoever gets rid of everybody else, once they establish that and they achieve it, then they're going to turn on each other. That is human nature. I just wanted to throw that in because you guys are really good on that one. The thing that my comment I caught in on is, the reason we are having a hard time on this, we always have viewed that the Democrats and the liberals are the ones that's for this Agenda 21. And as I go through a lot of the issues that they get credit for, the Republicans are a part of it. And whenever you try to bring up their record because of, I guess, celebrity worship, you can almost get your eyes scratched out and you at least get ignored. I'm sitting here and I don't want to get in a fuss with anybody, but I'm sitting here looking at Newt Gingrich's name on the screen. You know, Newt Gingrich has been a part of this. Yeah. Newt Gingrich has his own thing. Sarah Palin supports. I got a copy of her letter that she endorsed the UNC treaty, and for those who love her, you can't tell her that. And then, and back in June of 2012, Obama gave 7 Alaskan islands to Russia. And Sarah Palin wasn't screaming about it. Talk radio wasn't talking. So what we got to do, if we're going to win this thing and turn this thing back, we've got to do like the brother of Ted Zagansky, however you pronounce his name, the Unabomber. It broke his heart that he had to call the police and turn his brother in once he saw the letters and recognized his handwriting and some of the features of the way, his, the characteristics of the writing. He knew this was his brother. You know, and we got to at some times be willing to turn against our own, it, not turn against them like and tear them up. Just say, turn to them, look, man, you're wrong. You are wrong, and you need to change on this stuff. I can't support you. But we get this thing, especially in the Republican Party, we create this celebrity worship. Well, I don't, but they do. They create this celebrity worship, and once you like this guy or this gal, it's hard to hear that they're wrong on something. And I just want to throw that out, that we're not going to, you know, if you can't say what's true about Marco Rubio's record on, mm-hmm. on a lot of issues, then you know, we can't call him out on it. And if we can't call him out, we're going to keep thinking, well, we just need more R's. No, we don't need more R's. We need the right people that can stand with conviction.
And speaking of that, and thank you very much for calling in. I'll keep your mic open. But, of course, you know, we'll give people plenty of opportunity to chime in. But because you brought up the Democrats and the Republicans and whether this gentleman would like to chime in or not, I'm going to open up his mic just in case. But I do have on the line Randy Stufflebeam, who is the National Vice Chairman of the Constitution Party, and we're talking about conservatism and the right. So I'd like to open up his mic. And if there's anything he'd like to chime in about. Randy, you there?
It was very interesting.
Welcome to the show, Randy.
He got woke up.
Does he want a comment?
Man, where do I start? And then, of course, the ultimate question is, where do I stop?
But, yeah.
you know, I do want to say I appreciate a lot of the comments that have been made. We were just talking on my other blog talk show. I was interviewing a guy there. And, you know, the fact is that our founding fathers, whether you want to talk about Benjamin Franklin, the guy that basically most people point their finger and say, see, he wasn't a Christian. But even he talked about, you know what, I saw providence. And had I been an atheist, I would now be a Christian because of what I saw. And, you know, so to see the truth of what these founding fathers had to say is, you know, pretty miraculous. But, no, you know, the Agenda 21 issue, I describe it as the Communist Manifesto on steroids. I mean, basically, yeah. It has basis right there where you tax everybody, you take control of the systems. And like I had mentioned, I interviewed Tom DeWeese. I'm sure most of you who are familiar with the Agenda 21 know who Tom is.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a website called the American Policy Center, and on there he has some stuff that you can download where you can actually attack. It says a special report, Agenda 21, and how to stop it. And what's really scary, you know, you talk about, you know, the Council of Governors that we have, the Association of Governors,
mm-hmm.
and just a couple of years ago, you know, Obama came up with this Council of Governors, where it was a council of 10 governors, 10 regions, and with the quote-unquote job description of trying to figure out how they're going to put together the militia with the national forces. But you know that it's far more than that. And so, you know, that we've got to see this for what it is. And the fact is, and the I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with all the names. I was trying to get everyone. It may have been Cindy here that was talking about this, but you know, in the global scheme of things, which you know, that there was the 1910 episode of this meeting of central bankers and senators meeting on Jekyll Island, and they put together a plan. And we're just now seeing the massive fruition of what was planned. And globally, the reason they sell debt the way they do is because it's based upon a commodity, the commodity of people. As you had called them serfs, we're all going to be serfs, but we're sold as commodities on the global exchange. So, you know, it's all of these pieces put together. But, you know, Robert, you brought me on with the to talk a little bit about, you know, the idea of the R and the D's and, you know, what we're going to do. And the fact of the matter is that especially at the upper levels, the R's and the D's are controlled by that central banking, you know, that cartel, you know, of people who own the world, basically, in a sense. And the only way we're ever going to fight this is from the outside. In 2010, all those Tea Party people who were elected, you know, without exception, every single one of those great Tea Party heroes have significantly caved to some unconstitutional position, with exception.
Can I throw something in here?
Sure, go ahead.
Listen, I went to the site and I did this here in Florida. Did you know that here in Florida in 2010, there was 702, I counted them myself, 702 people, human beings, running for various offices. We had 22 people running for U.S. Senate, but there were 702, and I bet everybody listening to this show can only name one non-professional person, political politician, that got elected, and that there was Alan West. There were thousands of people across the country, citizens that could not get a voice in either media, the Republican or the Democrat media. Listen, we had a constitutional scholar running for Senate, and he couldn't get a voice. And he had some money in the six figures in an account saying, anybody that can prove me wrong, I'll give them the money and I'll drop it. I'll drop out of the race. He couldn't even get anybody to talk to him. Marco Rubio had two citizens, one of them, and I talked to both of them. One of them was a retired colonel from the Air Force that saw the need for leadership. Another one was a doctor down in Port Orange. Okay, they were both running as Republicans. We had a Republican congressional primary debate, okay? Bud Hettinger of 540 WFLA emceed it, but we didn't have a Senate primary debate. And the morning after the primary, Marco Rubio won with 84%, and I sent all the local talk shows and the newsrooms email. Marco Rubio won with 84%. Can anybody tell me who he ran against in the primary? One lady from WDBO, Martha, from the newsroom, sent me an email and said, I don't know, but I'll find out. And I sent her my number. I said, when you find it, call me. She called me back, and she gave me the two names, right? And I said, you know what? We didn't have a debate for the primary. These are two citizen Republicans. They had a fair debate. They should have had a fair debate. But you know what? When you walked into the poll, most people, all they seen was Marco Rubio and these other two guys and never heard of them. And guess what? You're going to only go with what you know. And that was fraud. But listen, there was thousands of people across this country that ran for office, and all we got was about one handful of non-political people getting elected across the country.
Before you go, I see we're getting ready to go into the recorded time, so I'd like to thank everyone who is here to the live show. And, of course, if you'd like to listen to the extended version, just call in at 347-945-7428. But if you would just like to wish to listen to the archive, it will be available shortly after the show if you'd like to listen to that. But if you'd like to listen live, call in. And, of course, if you'd like to chime in as well, call in. And also, if you'd like to talk, just push the 1 on your number dial, and we will get to opening your mic so you can participate. So go ahead,
hey, Robert,
sir. I apologize for interrupting.
Robert,
go ahead,
wait a minute. Wait. Let me just say something else before they go. If you can't get on really quick to get on to hear this about how to check in your own local place, how this is being implemented, you can go to the archives, and since you've already listened to the whole show anyway, if you want to pass over stuff, you can let it load for a while and then just drag your bar over towards the end of the show, half or over half the show.
Right, two-thirds, right.
You'll be able to hear just the part that went into overtime, and so you'll be able to listen to what we're about to tell you without having to listen to the whole show all over again.
I still want to hear Karen's depiction of the mortgage meltdown with a chalkboard, though. I need to
see
that.
Definitely.
I was a teacher. I'm used to using a chalkboard. I did it on a chalkboard already.
Well, let's do it.
Trying to figure out the best way to explain it. It's such a big thing to explain.
Yeah.
Well, if you understand it, it really explains everything, because if this group of people that is running the show, and you're right, they give us, they say, oh, you want big government? We'll give you the Democrats. Oh, you want big business? We'll give you the Republicans. One way or the other, you're going to wind up in the same place anyway.
Right.
Once you get past that, and the fact that everything they're telling us is a lie, and you realize what they're saying, if you do the opposite, you'll really come out good, because that's what they mean, the opposite of what they're saying. If we got together, you're right. They have all the money. We know that. They have all the money right now. They stole it from us. Now they want all the land, because that's where all the resources are. They did a good job of accomplishing it in the African countries. They went to the African dictators. They went into this sustainability program. They gave them huge loans. They paid off with their people. They couldn't pay enough, so they gave them the land. That's the way it works. That's what they're doing in the rest of the world. That's what they want to do here. All of the things that we're talking about fit in this puzzle, but they all lead back to the same place. And that's why I said there's really four E's of Agenda 21. There's those three circles. Equity, we talked about that. They want ownership of the people. And we, the people, get our laws, our rights are granted by God. We don't have to listen to them. It's driving them crazy. They can't stand it. That's why they're out to kill all the Christians any way they can. They'll bring in the Muslim Brotherhood. They'll side with their enemy. They don't care. They got to get rid of the Christians, because the Christians think they're nuts. They don't believe that they're equal to Mother Earth and the birds and the bees and the trees. They think, you know, that everything is equal and you should do what I say because I'm telling you, and I'm richer than you and smarter than you because I stole everything from you because I lied to you.
And
that's,
and Karen,
what they
actually,
that's what they believe.
With those pictures, go ahead.
If you understand that, then you understand the way the pieces fit, and you can start correcting it. And you got to correct it individually. So the first thing you have to do is say they want the person. Okay, so what are they doing? Well, they're teaching the kids in school that they're mediocre. They're teaching them that they're not individuals, that they shouldn't have any curiosity, they shouldn't have any innovation, and they should fit into the government slot in the school-to-work program. That's what school is. They call them human capital. Listen to the commercials. Listen to Shirley MacLaine. She said, oh, the human capital should be trained to work. This is what school is going to be in the 1989 convention. She said, individuals, who needs them? Well, they become part of the collective. There should be no more individualism in school. Surprise, they're not teaching any. She also said the nation should not exist. There should be no individual American exceptionalism. They tell you what they're going to do, and then they lie so that you'll believe something else. But you got to go back to the beginning, like our founding documents, and read what they say. That's how you know what they're doing. Rick and I are part of a group called the Agenders, Agenders. And our website is agenda21today.com. And what we've done with agenda21today.com is we're making it into a search engine of anything that you could possibly want to know about Agenda 21, because it's such a big picture that it's almost impossible to understand and grasp and get your head around what this is all about. It is total control of human activity, period.
Get it. It's not a Republican or Democratic issue.
Because
look at the last five presidents have all been on board with this. So it doesn't make any difference whether they're Democrat or Republican. This is about our life.
That's right.
And I've always said for a long time there's no difference between Democrats and Republicans. Democrats just want to, they want to get on board with the program. this one world government, but all they care about is, you know, at some point all standing around holding hands and singing Kumbaya, the Republicans just want to make sure they're in charge. But they
Go ahead, Rick. I was just going to say with Karen, if she can get some JPEGs to me of those chalkboard writings that Arden would like to see, I could put those up on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website and also put them, some of the JPEGs up here under the description of tonight's show for those who were going to listen to the archives as well.
On our website, agenda21today.com, I know we are changing it, but there's a section called Get Involved. When you put the drop-down menu, we have flyers and brochures and presentations and things that agendas all over the country have done. Every Thursday night, we have a conference call, and we invite a speaker to come on and tell us some particular aspect of Agenda 21. Tomorrow night, Roger Gagetano is going to be on, and he's going to talk about the Muslim influence, because we found in Florida that we have six Muslim, radical Muslim charter schools. Isn't that nice? We're so lucky. So he's going to come in and talk about that. And then what we do after the conference call is kind of like what we're doing now. The people on the line talk about, this is going on in my community, what can we do, so we all brainstorm, and what's going on in different states. But we look at Florida, because Florida is one of the models that the UN has chosen. We're so fortunate. And they're trying a lot of stuff out in Florida, so we're telling other states so they get the right laws in place even before it happens.
Tuesday
night.
Nutrient Act. Water Act.
Hey, I'm gonna interject. I need to go. This is Mark Musser. I appreciate having me on.
Well, thank you very much.
Appreciate the time
for coming on, Mark.
But I got to go. But I appreciate. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Well, I appreciate it.
Okay.
And, thank you. Good night. And
okay,
you guys can go to Mark Musser's website, and that's at www.rmarkmusser. That's MUSSER.com. And as I said, you could go to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, go to the Get Involved page, and you will see a button there with a link to go to Mark's website and check out more things about him there. So I'd like to thank you very much for coming onto the show. So, Arlen, I'd like to open up the mic to you and then get back to 407.
Hey, Robert.
And then see if Randy would like to chime in. Go ahead.
Yeah, Robert, this is Randy, and I just want to say real quickly, and this is just a throw out a real quick comment, is when you understand who, and I think this was being mentioned earlier, when you understand who is actually in control of the two-party duopoly, the rest of it just simply makes sense, and you start seeing it for what it really is.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Arlen. Can I share something on that?
Yeah, but first of all, real quick, I'll have Arlen go ahead and chime in, and then I'll bring it over to you, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Arlen?
Well, I'll definitely be eager to talk to you, Karen, offline after the program, maybe tomorrow, whenever it's convenient. For one thing, there's some Gulag-bound articles that I think your site would be interested in.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and I'm eager to hear more about your site and your programs for communication and coordination. It's something that's very, very near and dear to my heart.
Oh, that is wonderful.
What the other caller was getting at about land ownership gets to one of the cruxes of the issue. I mentioned earlier that, yes, indeed, we had a liberty-based revolution, but at its core, you know, it's all about authority. When you're talking about politics, you have to start off with the question of who has authority to do what. And the American Revolution, what makes America exceptional is that it was a sovereignty-based revolution, the sovereignty of the people, where we did go back to Genesis, where God said, I'm going to put you guys in charge of the world. And we're all created equal. We're all created in God's image. And that grew and grew and grew in Western civilization and Christian thought and in philosophy, so to the point where like the left and the right foot so to speak, of the American Revolution in terms of the philosophers were Algernon Sidney, and then a generation or so later, John Locke. And they were all about popular sovereignty and expressing that. And if you read the Declaration of Independence, you cannot read that without understanding that it's a manifesto for popular sovereignty and individual sovereignty. And that does not mean, you know, handing.
Okay, but that's
the problem, is that in school today.
But you've got to remember that the American Revolution started because of gun control.
The army
had been sent to capture powder and ball. That Hancock and Adams had secured, and that was going to end any chance that these people in 1775 could defend themselves against the most tyrannical government the world had ever seen.
Okay, give me a couple more minutes. What that gets back to here again is sovereignty. In Romans chapter 13, it says, obey the governing authorities because they don't carry the sword in vain. In Hebrews chapter 13, it says that the authorities must give an account to God for what they do with their authority. That's the people. So we're the ones that have the sword in America, and absolutely so. And that's what's so critical about the Second Amendment. And since we have authority and everybody has that equal authority, we do have natural law that says that we are not allowed to impede upon the free and virtuous living of other people. And that's what brings liberty and the unalienable rights to life, liberty, and property into the equation, and government being there to protect those rights, and government essentially being there and managed by the people. And if it becomes despotism, as it specifically states in the Declaration of Independence, it's not only our right, but our duty to throw off the despotism and make it better. And so, to make a long story short, I think we need a reset on this whole issue of what is America all about at the core. And it's about, yes, I can own my own land. I can have my own gun. I have authority because I'm the prince in this nation, along with all the rest of the citizens. I am in control, and not you guys.
Okay, but here's the problem. The problem is, close your eyes, go to sleep, knock yourself on the head, wake up, and you only know America from 1865.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's being taught in school. That's what Common Core is all about. That's why I said that as part of Agenda 21, they address equity, the economy, and the environment. So I looked at it and I said, okay, there's a piece missing. There's the piece they don't want to tell us about, because I know them. I worked with them. I used to be one of them. What's missing? What's
education.
Missing is the thread, and the thread is education. And there is a concerted effort from the beginning of when we were talking about World War II and the scientists and the environmental movement. That was exactly perfectly correct, except now remember, those philosophers, those psychologists, and those scientists, when they went fleeing out of Europe when Hitler went on his rampage, came to America.
Right.
And they wound up in Yale and Harvard and Columbia and Berkeley, and they taught our kids, who then went into the field and became the teachers and educators and eggheads, who started training the teachers, educators, and eggheads, who started training them again. And then we had the Vietnam War, and they sent our men to war and told the rest of them, if they become teachers, they'll be draft exempt, and put them in the schools. And now the kids in school learn nothing but communism.
If
I have something else to add to that? Can I add something to it?
Sure, go ahead.
To add to that, back right after World War II, there was a guy named Dr. Benjamin Spock, who was really into this stuff, training the children and the teachers who trained. And listen, those children, that the men came home, the women went back home to raising their children, the men came home from the military and built the country that we know today. they were sitting under his teaching, and guess what? Those children that sat under his teaching were the 60s kids that went off to college.
Yep.
And they were, even though that some of these people came from
religion. Hold on, let me say this. Go ahead.
Even though many of these people came from devout religious homes, they had the things in them that made them accept this. On the education, one other thing. There's a guy down in Sebring, a farmer that ran for office here named Bobby Bean back in 2010. He got ignored. He ran for Senate. But he wrote a book, and it's called Shattered Dreams, Broken Patriot. If you were to read what he says about the education system and how it destroyed his family, you read just the first chapter, you will stop and go, wow, wow. You'll see the beast, the machine that the education has system has become. Get a chance, if you can even find just the first chapter online someplace and read it, I promise you, you'll want to buy the book.
And what's the name
again?
Shattered Dreams.
Can I ask you guys one question?
Hold on. Let me finish the name of the book.
Go ahead.
Shattered Dreams, Broken Patriot by Bobby Bean. He spells it with two B's like a girl, B-O-B-B-I-E. Just go type in Shattered Dreams, Broken Patriot, and Amazon and come up.
Okay.
And it's an amazing book. Matter of fact, if y'all want, I can introduce you to him if somebody will send me an email. Well, I tell you what, Karen, you got my email. I'll send you his information and you pass it on, okay?
Absolutely. You have my email. Send it to me.
Yes. I'm on your mail list and I send stuff to you.
Then email it to me. Great, that's perfect.
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely. And let me know. I wouldn't mind checking it out. And if you'd like to come onto the show as well, I'd be happy to have them. So here's how I'd like to do this. We'll go with back over to you. Karen, and then I'd like to open up the mic to Randy, and then we'll get on from there. Go ahead.
Okay. Karen. What I want everybody to understand is the three things that they tell you about. Equity. That means you, your person, they want to control it. Your private property, they want to control it. They want to control you through morality. And morality means the elimination of the Judeo-Christian values and the institution of things of Lucifer because they're Luciferian. Okay, they want to control you by owning what you own, by controlling your business. There will be no small business. Every time they say they want to save the middle class, it means they want to destroy the middle class. You got to use their vernacular and think the opposite of what they mean because that's the way they speak in doublespeak or newspeak. Then they use the environment. And they use what they call the precautionary principle, which means if I think it's going to happen, it's going to happen, and you're going to have to live that way because I'm going to tell you what to do because I think that might happen.
Because I imagined it.
No, because I imagined it, and I can imagine anything I want because I'm busy smoking crack and everything else because I'm really one of these crazy, sinful people, but I want you to live that way. Do what I say, not what I do.
I found with these progressives that the best way to handle anything that they say is play the fortune cookie game, where, you know, if a couple people go to the Chinese restaurant, they have a fortune cookie, they end it with the phrase "in bed." I'm not advising that, but anything that they say, just end it with "in their heads,"
right,
or in your
head
if you're talking to one, and that pretty much gets it back to.
Right,
there's
nothing, nothing is real, nothing.
Because they're told to ignore history, ignore principle, because we can imagine something better.
That's right, and that's what they base everything on, and we have to get past the spot that what they're saying is real, because it's not. It has no validity. It's like I love when they tell me that we are equal in the environment. We are all equal. Oh, I'm so excited. I'm so happy when I hear that because then I say, okay, well, I went home and I asked my cat to make me dinner and she said, meow. So how are we equal? It does not make sense. Does not compute. You have to be visual with them, too. That's another thing.
But what we're
thing.
Trying to do is we're trying to teach pantheism.
Right.
In our school systems, and do away with Christianity altogether.
So they got the Supreme Court to agree that human secularism, they call humanism, is now a religion, And they are teaching it in our schools. So they're not teaching anything Judeo-Christian. They're teaching human secularism. No wonder why these kids hate God. They're learning it in school, and we're not paying attention. We're not paying attention. And I'm going to stand on my head and jump up and down and tell everybody that's listening, there is not one dime that you can spend on education that will fix anything if you don't change the curriculum, period.
Right.
It has nothing to do with anything else. It's the curriculum. It's communist. We're teaching them to be communists. Then why are we surprised when they turn out communist?
Right.
And, you know, when somebody enters into these conversations that we're having, they're going to typically somebody gets confused because, well, communism is about egalitarianism. Now you're talking about fascism. Now you're talking about authoritarianism. And the whole point of it all is to understand, as my colleague James Simpson wrote so well in his The Manufactured Crisis article number 3 that has a Lemmings in the title, those people that controlled the Soviet Union had big dachas on the Black Sea, just like Thomas Ayers was a really wealthy man, Bill Ayers' father in Chicago. And mm-hmm. Marx and all of these people come from high-end backgrounds, and they practice what's called entrepreneurial Marxism, and they make money doing it, just like the banks that finance them make money. And it all tends to be, we're going to throw egalitarianism up to the people that can be fooled that way. We're going to throw transnational capitalism and state-controlled and led public-private partnerships to the people that can be duped that way, and we're just going to keep on gaining control. That's all it is.
That's all. They have all the money. They want all the power and all the control. And right now, that's the only thing they don't have, because they don't have all the votes. And that's the big problem. And if we, the people, could come together and vote the right people in, forget about the R, forget about the D, forget about the letter. It's the person. We're Americans. We have to be Americans first.
And where we have an issue with what Sarah Palin wrote, because she was governor and maybe got caught up in short-sightedness or maybe something worse, well, let's just ask her. Let's get to the point where we can ask politicians and warn them about, what about all these military exercises in all these cities? What about all these gun buys, these ammo buys? And now we have the president talking about a set of policy regarding drone strikes in the United States. What about that, Mr. Congress?
End political correctness. End it. Stop.
Right.
Tell the truth.
That's
talk about politics and religion, and stop being the silent majority.
Hey, on the political correctness, which is just communist mind and behavior control, one thing I hear a lot, and it comes out of Hindu, this stuff coming over here in the 60s, one thing I hear when I hear somebody say, well, perspective is reality, I say, no, perspective is behavior. You know, mm-hmm. The Leaning Tower of Pisa is leaning because Pisa means marshy land. That's why it's leaning. We can change the definition of swamp, okay? But we're a fool if we build our house in the shadows of the tower, and that is what they're doing. When someone mentions the word gay, I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean? Well, he tells me, I'm homosexual. I said, that's not what gay means. Gay is a synonym of joy. So that doesn't make any sense. Don't change the definitions of words. And you got to get this is the education, and that's why I say perspective is behavior.
Well, a couple of things, folks, that I'd like to chime in. I want to give Randy opportunity to chime in. I've just seen that Arlen, his line just dropped, and unfortunately, when it is in the recording session, that folks are unable if their line drops to call back in. So. Unfortunately, it looks like we lost Arlen there on his line. So I apologize for that, Arlen, that you won't be able to call back in if you're still listening. But we'll definitely talk another time. And thank you very much for Arlen Williams for coming onto the show. And, of course, you guys can find more of his stuff at www.gulagbound.com. And that's GulagBound.com, and also check out his Facebook group, Sovereignty Campaign, where you can find a link to that website or to that Facebook page by going to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. But also as a little update, as I mentioned in the beginning of all of the shows, is that Bard's Logic Political Talk, or myself, is a part of the Patriot Journalist Network, in which I just got something here from Barbara Byers. Thank you very much, Barbara, for sending me this message. And it talks about Congressman Wolf sends letter of thanks to PatriotJournalist.com. And I will read it briefly here. It says, "Dear Patriot Journalist Network, thank you for your recent Twitter campaign supporting my resolution to create a House Select Committee to investigate the terrorist attack in Benghazi, Libya. I sincerely appreciate your efforts to promote communication between the government and the people. Best of luck as you continue to grow your organization. Best wishes, sincerely, Frank R. Wolf, Member of Congress." So that's great news to hear. And, of course, folks, check out the Patriot Journalist Network by going to patriotjournalist.com. And I'll repeat that because I flubbed up there a second. And it's just patriotjournalist.com. Folks, go ahead and check that out. And so what I'd like to do at this point is open up the mic to Randy. Go ahead, Randy.
Hey, wait a minute. Wait. Robert?
Oh, yes?
Before we go any further, I really, you know, I said this a long time ago that we were going to have Rick and Karen maybe too tell us how these were being implemented. What I'd like to do is right now get Rick. Rick, you're still on there?
I'm still here.
Okay. Would you please, I mean, 32% of the land in your county is owned by the government. Explain to us how it got that way and what they are doing to get a hold of the land and what they're planning to do with it.
Well, there's been lots of schemes, but essentially what I've found you can do, and I've done this for several counties now because I've gone to other counties and shown them how they can go into to their county appraiser's office and look to see what their county and what the governments, the federal government, state governments, and so forth, own in their county. And all you got to do is go on the appraiser site, put in Volusia County or put in Putnam County or Duval County, wherever county you're looking at, and it'll take them, pull up a list of all the properties owned in the county. And then what you got to do is you start looking. Everybody but Volusia so far have found they've got what's called GSI mapping. So you pull up the map that's on that supervisor's site, and it'll show up where that block of land is, and you can take and use the GSI mapping, which is Government Information Services, and you can check an adjacent piece of property and see what the difference is in the appraisal is a proper. Now, what I did in Putnam County, we had 2 years ago, the county was trying to buy 1,300 acres of swampland in the western part of the county. For no reason, no viable reason. And when I started going through and doing the search on the county website, what I did is I looked to see what the taxes were paid on that piece of property year after year after year. I think it went back to like 2004, 2005. Just in that one 1,300-acre piece of property that it was paying, let me find it here, $16,468 a year just on that one block of property. When I picked the four largest pieces of property, not the four most recent pieces of property the county had acquired, the total loss in revenue the county is $1.4 million. And it's real easy to do. And then I was at the county board of commissioners like five times asking them not to buy the property. I even wrote letters to Governor Scott. I had letters hand-carried to Governor Scott. I went to see our state CPA, Jeff Atwater. I explained to him the situation. I said, look, you're on the board of the Florida Forever Program. Please don't give Putnam County the $3 million to buy this land. But he did it anyway. It ended up costing the taxpayers of Putnam County $338,000. The rest of the money came out of the state coffers. The last time I was there at the county commissioners meeting, they said, we're going to go ahead and go through the buy regardless of what you want. We're also looking at an additional acreage in the south end of the county, and we're sure you're going to be back then. And so I started looking to see what is it they were going to buy or what they're going to acquire. In August of 2011, we had the Putnam Land Conservancy send out letters to everybody in this one development called the Whispering Pines. It was 1,206 acres. It was 1,000 building lots. Probably only about a third of the lots had ever had anything built on. But right adjacent to it was 7,200 acres owned by the St. Johns River Water Management. So out of the 1,000 landowners, already some 300 of them have already deeded their property over to the Putnam Land Conservancy. It takes it off the tax rolls because they are a conservancy group. And if you lived in a cul-de-sac and there was five other lots there in that cul-de-sac and all four of your neighbors decided to deed their property over the Land Conservancy, what's that going to do to the value of your house that you're living in? It just fell through the floor. Just that one 1,200 acres, that 1,000 lots, I pulled it down, the numbers on it, pays on the average of $676,000 a year in tax, just that one piece of property. We see our tax rolls or our expenses of our government going up and up and up, and they continue to raise our taxes to make up for those differences, but yet they keep buying this land. So one of the things we can do to stop this insane, the loss of public land or the loss of private land, is to do the search in each of your counties. Again, just go to your county appraiser site, check it out for yourself. Put in there, you can put U.S. government, you can put state of Florida, you can put Volusia County, whatever you want to, and start identifying the properties and what their acreage is, what the percentage of the total county that is public lands now. And you can try and start for getting enough people to understand. It doesn't make it that
point
of the tax base is costing everybody that's still paying taxes. And
Rick,
then you might be able to incite these people, look, you've got to start selling this land and get rid of it. We don't need public property. For me, I see if the county says we're going to buy this property in the St. John's River because we're going to put a park in there for everybody. Wait a minute.
Cindy, go ahead, Rick.
Let me ask you this, Rick.
After this, Cindy, I mean, to be fair with time and all,
Randy,
I do want to bring in Randy. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, sorry, Randy. So what we have, Rick, is we have the Trust for Public Land. We've got the St. John's Water Management District. We have the Nature Conservancy, Florida Forever Program. You got Rails to Trails, the Greenway Programs. This is all the stuff that you went over the other night, okay? These are all aspects that are happening within our communities. And what people need to do is they need to go in to their county government and find out if they've got any programs like this where you've got a public land trust where ask them, do they have any this stupid letter that went out? Are you from the government?
No, this came out.
Are you tired of paying your property taxes on the vacant parcel of land that you own in Putnam County? Would you like to donate your parcel and receive a tax deduction and help land conservation efforts? I mean, this is the kind of thing that they're sending out. And people need to be informed that what this is about is not conserving land. It's about getting control of the land. And then organizing the people into these little corridors of population where they can control everybody, and everybody's living in the same place. And they're the rails to trails thing. And you got to be able to ride your bicycle to the rail, get on the rail, and go somewhere. Doesn't matter what the weather is. Doesn't matter if it's raining, if it's a blizzard, whatever. You have to ride your bike to get to the rail. Or, you know, everything has to be done on a bus or whatever, public transportation. We got to get rid of cars. Got to get those cars off the highway. And so all of that has to do with buying land and keeping people off of that land and forcing them to go into certain areas. And I know we have a place in sustainable development. We got an eye opener in you probably know about the Edgewater thing where they actually took a piece of land and improved it. They built, they planted trees, big old beautiful oak trees are there now. It was a long time ago. And it's a park kind of area. And now they want to take control of that area, take that park, and cut down those trees and make it back into this prairie nothing land like it used to be.
Right.
That's what sustainable development is about. It's nothing to do with common sense or, you know, conserving anything that we want to have. It's about keeping people off of it. They don't want anybody on that piece of land using it as a park or whatever. They got to cut down those trees and go back to the nature, back to the way it was, you know, and they say so many years ago. Well, who knows what it was like 2,000 years ago? We weren't here 2,000 years ago. It was Indians. The Indians didn't tell us what it used to be. But anyway, so, Randy, you go ahead and talk right now and tell us what you know about how this is being implemented in your what state are you from, Randy?
Oh, I'm here in Illinois. I have myself muted.
Oh, you're in Illinois. Okay.
Oh yeah.
What do you guys see in Illinois that is happening there?
Well, you got to understand we're from the communist state of Illinois. So I mean, Agenda 21 yeah. is just kind of like the common day every. Aspect of everyday life here in Illinois, but you know, here's the thing, and if I can just go ahead and go on a little bit here, I just said over on my other show, and I think I even started it here, that Agenda 21 is basically just a communist manifesto on steroids. I mean, everything that you're talking about is basically one of the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto, and I don't know if your listeners have had a chance to hear this, but number one, I mean, you're talking about this, but you've got to understand, this is the first plank of the Communist Manifesto, abolition of property and land and application of all rents of land to public purposes. Number two, a heavy, progressive, or graduated income tax. Number three, abolition of all right of inheritance. Four, confiscation of the property of all immigrants and rebels. Five, the centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and exclusive monopoly. We're seeing that at the, you know, with the Federal Reserve. Centralization of the means of communication and transportation in the hands of the state. You were just talking about that. Seven, the extension of factories and instruments of production owned by the state, the bringing into cultivation of wastelands, the improvement of soil generally in accordance with a common plan. Eight, equal liability of all to labor. Establishment of industrial armies, hello, unconstitutional standing armies since World War II, especially for agriculture. Number nine, combination of agriculture with manufacturing industries, gradual abolition of distinction between town and country by a more equal distribution of the population over the country. And number 10, free education for all children in public schools. Abolition of children's factory labor in its present form. And remember, this was written quite a few years ago. And then the final clause of Plank 10 says the combination of education with industrial production. Okay. Tell me that almost every facet of what I just read hasn't already been implemented here in these United States of America. And that's the 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto. And when you start reading through Agenda 21, you see that that was just simply built upon this, and it's nothing more than the Communist Manifesto on steroids. And, you know, they control it because they have the power of the money. They dangle the carrot in front of these counties, and, you know, people start saying, oh, yeah. And the other thing, talking about with, you know, Christians, part of the problem with Christians, they don't even know what Christianity is all about. They don't even crack open the Bible to see what Christianity really means. And certainly they have no idea what the Constitution means. So, you know, we've got a problem of an uneducated, self-deluded population here in this country. So we've got a multiple facet of problems here, that a lot of it is self-induced. And part of it, obviously, is taking advantage of by, you know, our government. So, you know, we've really got to get on top of this thing with educating people. I appreciate, you know, the things that all of you are doing, you know, in terms of this education. We've got to get this talked about. But I think, you know, we have, you know, you talk about how we can do this. And the gentleman that was talking about, go to your county and take a look at what properties are being done and take a look at all that. Well, you know what? We can't even get people to just show up. If we could just get people just to show up to these county meetings, the conversation changes.
Can
and
I,
I'll tell you,
I,
they get really afraid if you bring a pen and paper.
Something? Can I say something?
Sure.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, hon.
Okay. We're working on that, and we would love to work with you, too. And I'd like to, you asked Cindy what we're doing, you know, how you can recognize Agenda 21 and what you can do about it. We won't have enough time to do all of that, but I can tell you that on our website, agenda21today.com, if you go to the Get Involved section and you use the drop-down menu, you'll find brochures. And you'll find a brochure that says 21 signs of Agenda 21 in your community. You can look at that. It's all the signs. We're trying to educate as many people as fast as possible. So connecting with people like we're doing tonight is wonderful. And we have to continue that. It's fabulous. We call ourselves the Agenders. We are Americans ending Agenda 21. We are Americans. We all have to be Americans. We have to stop being divided things. We can't be divided anymore. We have the power of the vote. All the statistics that we all know are all lies, but one of them is always the same. And it happens to be the truth, and that is there's about 80% of the population that more often than not votes with each other. The problem is, of that 80%, about 50% of them don't pay attention anymore because they're so turned off.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to get a way to get to them. One of the things that we did is we came out with a newspaper. We decided that as they're pushing high tech, we were going to try and experiment with low tech. And we wanted to see if people don't read a paper because they hate the news, or they don't read a paper because they don't like what is in the paper. And they don't like what's in the paper. So our paper, called the AmericanPatriotNews.us, on its own website, AmericanPatriotNews.us, also on Agenda21Today.com are the archives. We started a county paper, and it has taken off incredibly in one county, Taylor County, Florida. In December, we gave out 600 copies. In
January we were up to 60 locations, and we gave out over 3,000 copies. Imagine that. 3,000 people learned the truth. Look at it that way. People started showing up at commissioner meetings because they began to know and understand what their commissioners were doing. It's been wonderful. We've expanded into 5 more counties in Florida and 4 more states. And anybody can do it. It's very easy. We made it very easy. That is time for another conversation. We have a meeting of people in Florida, hopefully part of a group, not part of a group, it doesn't matter. These are people in Florida who are Americans and want to work to save the state of Florida. And from that, we are developing a group, 5 committees, so that we can inform the people of Florida what's going on in Tallahassee, which is equally as despicable as what's going on in Washington. But if we don't work on our state and our local areas first, it won't matter. And what's going on in Tallahassee is despicable, which is another conversation.
Now, I want you to repeat the part one more time, in case somebody didn't have a pencil ready or something. Mm-hmm. Repeat one more time. Where to go on your website to find the ways to tell whether it's going on in your county.
In your community? Okay. Go on agenda21today.com. And it may also have the name of my radio show, which is American Freedom Watch Radio. On there, you will see on the right side, it says join, get the newsletter, sign for the newsletter, do that. And there's a section called Get Involved. If you don't know anything about Agenda 21, please, you know, use the site. On the site is a lot of information, all with reference material, all with experts, all with agendas all over the country who are willing to help anybody. We are a huge team, and we all are working together. And our goal is to expose this in whatever is the best way possible. We share information.
And you got 21 ways to
get involved section. Right. In the Get Involved section, when you press on that, it says brochures. And there's a brochure that says 21 signs Agenda 21 is in your community.
Okay.
And that brochure has 21 different ways that Agenda 21 creeps in your community.
Okay, that's what's important for us.
Yes.
And then, of course, what Randy was saying, we've got to show up at our council meetings.
Right, and the best way to show up, what we have found is, of course, hopefully you'll start a newspaper, but do a flyer blitz. Land grab. Commissioners committing land grab. That kind of thing. People don't pay attention to the newspaper anymore, and they rarely go on their county's website to see when a meeting is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of them don't even know who their commissioner is and don't even know if they have one.
Yep.
So you have to tell them what's going on. And you have to get people to go to school board meetings, planning meetings. I'm sure that there are plenty of people, of Americans available that could go to some of these meetings. You form a committee, a group, and when these items are heard, you are there. And basically, if you can educate your commissioners, that is your best resource. Because to go to a meeting and say, I don't want you to sell that piece of land, you're standing as one person.
Yeah.
If you have a group
and you, a commissioner on your side, you're standing with a lot of power.
Right.
And
okay,
we have a lot.
Well,
I was going to say we have a lot of resources, and for anybody that's experiencing any problems, they can send us an email and we'll call them. Somebody will call them and help them out, guide them in the direction to help to get some help.
And you have to stay informed on the changes too. I mean, Rick, you were saying in our other meeting that you know, ICLEI, it was the name of the organization that was going around, you know, to the different counties and establishing these relationships with these counties and implementing whatever they could get done.
If I could just interrupt just briefly, so that people know that ICLEI is the International Community of, what is it?
Environmental something.
Yeah, I just wanted people to understand, the listeners, that, you know, this is an international thing, and it's the, you know, the UN and all of this. I mean, you can find Agenda 21 and read through the whole thing on UN.org.
ICLEI is, if you look at it this way, ICLEI is the marketing arm of the United Nations. So they do all of the fancy goodies. They give it to NGOs, which are non-government organizations like the Audubon Society or the Sierra Club or the Friends of or the Heritage Centers or the conservation groups. They dole out the money that come with strings that train other groups within the state, like the Florida Association of Counties, the League of Cities, the League of Mayors. They get trained from these people who are getting their training from people who are getting their training from the United Nations. That's the problem. You have to follow the string. You have to follow the money.
Hasn't ICLEI changed their name now? I mean, hasn't they changed the name of
that?
They
all change their names all the time. They're hard to keep up with. There's about 3,000 of them by now. They have multiple names. It's like what you said. They use the same word, and they change the definition for what they need the definition to be at that time. So we could have a conversation talking about sustainability, and it means something different to everybody in the room. And by the time you leave the room, you're not talking to each other because somebody said something that was bad because they were thinking of something else.
And I hate to, you know, bring this up, but it's about that time for me to close out the show, unfortunately. And, you know, as Cindy said at the beginning of the show, this is definitely something that could carry on to subsequent shows, and I'm more than happy to do so. But at this time, you know, I'd like to close out. You guys have the opportunity to share the links to your websites and things of that nature, and, of course, people can find that on the Bars Logic Political Talk website as well. But, Randy, I know you've got, you know, a couple shows and a web page, so if you'd like to tell the folks about that, and then I will proceed to close out the show.
Well, thank you, Robert. And I just wanted to say thanks to your other guests. I mean, these are just absolutely vitally important topics that people have got to fully understand. And I've interviewed both Tom DeWeese and Lionel Tierzy, who is of the John Birch Society. Both, in fact, Lionel brings in a lot more information about the ICLEI and how they're involved. And, you know, you were talking about earlier that they changed the language because they started recognizing that people started going there, oh, sustainable development. Well, as soon as they heard that, you know, now they've started using other terminology. And so we've got to stay on top of the terminology, and you're absolutely right. I've got constitutionallycorrect.org. I do a broadcast called Constitutionally Correct. And, of course, being the national vice chairman of the Constitution Party, you know, I'm really focused on electing people who understand these important issues and will stand up against Agenda 21, will stand up against unconstitutional things that are happening across this nation. So just really appreciate the time. God bless you, Robert, and thanks for your guests that are here tonight.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you, everyone, for coming on. Thank you, Rick, and thank you, Karen, for coming on. And then Cindy, of course, thank you for bringing them on. And also, I know Arlen and, you know, Mark are not here any longer, but thank you if they're going to listen to the archive. Thank you again, gentlemen, for coming in. And please check out www.patriotjournalist.com. And if you decide to join, just tell Mark Prasik there that I said hello, and I'd appreciate it. It's a great networking site. And also, one thing I haven't promoted for a while, but check out the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. And you can just check that out. It's linked in the Get Involved page on the Bard's Logical Talk website. So check that out as well. I appreciate it. And also for those who've listened to the show, whether it was live tonight or on the archives, and you liked what you heard tonight and like to hear more, just go to the follow button on the Blog Talk Radio show homepage here for Bard's Logic, and just click the follow button underneath the show's icon, and you will get little email updates just to let you know that the show will be coming on, things of that nature. So I'd really appreciate it if you did that. So with that, thank everyone again, whether you listen live or
one more
time. Go ahead.
One more time, Karen, to get on your conference call tomorrow night, what do people have to do?
Go to agenda21today.com, and on the right side are the instructions for the conference call.
Okay.
Hey, I would like to say before I go, thank you for what you guys are doing. You guys are the true intellectuals of our time in America. And Karen, I'm sending you this thing on Bobby Bean on his book, and if you can look into it, talk to him, and not just you, but all of the people here tonight with shows, get him on and have him tell his story.
Yes, what a great idea. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to have him on. Just have him contact me through the webpage, the Bard's Logical Talk webpage, or the contact page there on the website, so you can contact me through there. So yeah, that'd be great. And then also for folks, these archive
Karen, she can forward it to you. Okay.
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you. And also, yeah, definitely share the link to tonight's show to whoever, you know, whoever you can, so they can listen to it in the archives themselves. But I will proceed now to close out the show, as I close out every show. So I'll be muting the mics and turn on the song here.
Thank
from
you, Rick.
Aubrey. Thank you, Rick, and everyone else for coming on. And I will be playing the song from Aubrey Ashburn. Good night, everyone. Take care, and hope to see you soon.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.